Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Wow. let me knock on some wood here. Or at least close enough to wood. Things seem to be going well. Gene's here. We've got my mechs working. All my programs and all the websites I wanted for the show are there. Everything seems to be functioning. I've cut down drastically on the number of windows I have open, including Facebook, which I have since closed. I used to leave it on so I could get messages. Then I realized, I've got a phone. I don't have to burden my computer. I've got a phone to get all those messages and things like that. So if you send me a message on Facebook, feel free, especially those who are about to come on the air. That's a good way to do it. And but otherwise, yeah. So we're functioning. All right. Today's show, sort of last minute in the sense that there were possibilities of where we're going to go this morning, and I wanted to make sure that Jonathan, our legal expert, criminal defense attorney, constitutional attorney, Second Amendment specialist, had a chance to kind of take a look at some stuff. But I'm thinking about this for some time. And that is the idea of malpractice lawsuits and the absence thereof. As far as I know, there are no major news-making COVID or COVID vaccine-related lawsuits currently under anything. No one's talking about it. And maybe it's because they're still in process and they haven't recorded the results. But usually something that sensational, that big, would be something that would make some major headlines. And I was just curious, why not? So we've got hopefully Dave Schneier joining us with Schneier at 6. It's now 6. Good morning, Dave. So hopefully he'll join us he's on holiday. He's still a student, so we'll make some allowances. Cindy Cagle should be joining us at 6:30, and I have talked to her, and so we'll get into the medical freedom report at that point. Jonathan isn't here until 7:30, but Cindy, for half hour report, it's really kind of cool because a lot of times she can stay longer, and as we get into more and more of these issues. And, of course, Gene, our wonderful producer, is always here. And whether by phone or computer, as I have to do sometimes, there's a lot of stuff that Gene makes possible for me to do, looking things up in the show, covering when something goes wrong with my system, all these other things that go on here. It's really essential. So let's bring her on. Gene, good morning. I think I have a feeling it might be you and me for the first hour this morning. But that's okay, because I've got more than enough material on the whole idea of medical malpractice to talk about. So what does that conjure up in your mind, as someone who's been in the health professions for years and years? When you hear a term medical malpractice, before I prejudice your thoughts with my thoughts, I'm just curious, where do you, if you hear, oh yeah, that's a malpractice lawsuit, or that's medical malpractice, what's that all about?
Good morning. Well, to me, it has to do with something happening to someone because of some error or, that's basically it. It could be wrong medicine, wrong dosage, but that's kind of extreme. And the reason I say that is sometimes, and now it's, I think, less likely because of how it's done, that it's usually put in the computer. But sometimes if you're supposed to give 2 or 0.5, and you don't see that dot, you give 5. That's a huge error, but yet that's it. I kind of look at it both ways. I know people, we're human. We can make mistakes, but, if you go into surgery and have your right kidney removed because of cancer and they remove your left, that's pretty extreme. Or your right leg and they were supposed to remove your left. Yes, it does.
And
there's supposed to be things in place to prevent that. Or that you take you to surgery and think you're the wrong person. That happens. That's why there's safeguards in place. So things like that, when something erroneously or something you can't even comprehend. But also, to me, it's like what's going on now with the COVID. When people are being made to have certain treatments that we know are not working and can cause death, that the government, the CDC, the NIH, Fauci, whoever, and the bottom line, that they're mandating it. And then the bottom line is that the hospitals get a kickback from monies because they diagnose someone with COVID. They've used a certain regime regimen of care, and that's knowing that to be the most effective. I have a problem with that as well. And then when you don't listen to a patient's family member, they're supposed to be part of the team. And that to me is all types of malpractice.
Yeah. Yeah, it's from what I've been reading about it, it seems to me that you really have to have a negligence involved. It's not just a mistake. I mean, anybody can make a mistake. I mean, we all make mistakes. You know, your auto mechanic can make a mistake. You know, anybody can do anything, but usually most things are preventable. Your auto mechanic, you know, forgets to put brake pads on. I've heard cases of auto mechanics forgetting to tighten the lug nuts on wheels. You know, people are driving down the highway, all of a sudden the wheels fall off. So, oh boy, that's a big mistake. Okay, but but small things like the wrong kind of oil, that's a little thing. And so there's all kinds of mistakes that are made. I've been through some major surgery. I mean, open heart surgery is about as invasive, I think, as it gets. And it was great. But then afterwards, you know, the blood thinners, I think, caused my chest to fill with fluid. That, I believe, was a mistake. And now, did I sue them over it? No. They fixed it, you know, with a lot of encouragement from me to drain all the fluid. My lung inflated and all was well. So I understand that they were doing their standard of care was blood thinners after heart surgery because apparently people have a tendency to be sedentary. And that's how you develop blood clots by sitting too much, lying down too much, things like that. I wasn't one of those people. I'm really, you know, hyperactive in all ways, both mentally and physically. I like to be up and doing things. And so I was one of the most active people, you know, on my ward and probably who knows for how long. So the risk of a stroke wasn't a risk with me. In fact, they endangered me more by giving me something that I wasn't going to be subject to anyway, likely, which were blood clots. And so I understand that that was a mistake, but it never crossed my mind to sue them. You know, I think they thought they were doing the right thing. I just think they were wrong. And once they, as long as they took my, you know, consent, which was to stop these damn things and said, okay, all right, you're off blood thinners. I was fine. But if they'd forced me to take them, then we would have had a problem. If they said, you can't get out of the hospital until you take more blood thinners, then we would have had a problem. But because it was a mistake, I understand that. That was standard procedure. I understand that too. The procedure was wrong for me. I certainly understood that, you know. And they listened to my consent over my own body as to what I wanted and what I didn't want, which are blood thinners. And we were all fine. And even though a mistake was made and I almost died, I didn't sue them over it. Because they did they cooperated with me in the ways that made sense. So I don't see that as a negligence problem or a willful misconduct problem. So I wouldn't call that medical malpractice. I'd call it a massive screw up. But that's the difference because they didn't then say, okay, you know, to cover their butts over what happened, they didn't force more blood thinners and force more things and try to endanger me further. Does that make sense? Is that where I'm going with this? See what I'm saying?
Yeah, it does. It does. We tend to be a sue happy society here in this country. Mm-hmm. However, something's warranted.
So was that last thing you said?
I said something's warranted. Some things are like, yes, they need to sue. And there's, you know, even on the show sometimes I've said, you know, certain people need to sue for, you know, how they were treated. It's just not right because bottom line is when you do something like that, there's two trains of thought. Sometimes if I would sue someone for something I think is just unjust and whatever, you know, I may have to hire a certain attorney. It may not be the best attorney, but it would be an attorney. However, when you have a lot of money, which a lot of these hospitals have or certain entities have, the best of the best attorneys, it's like they're the ones that tend to not have to pay hardly nothing because they've got the better attorney, which I think is really sad. It shouldn't have nothing to do with your attorney. It should have to do with the case and what transpired or didn't transpire.
Yeah, and when it comes to COVID, my question was, why aren't there more lawsuits on COVID? You know, you've got...
I think because they can't.
Well, this is what I'm wondering. This is what I'm trying to figure out. But even though laws are passed, you still don't sign your rights away. If Congress declared that there's Second Amendment's been overruled, that doesn't get rid of the Second Amendment. You can't sign your, or say you want to go to an apartment complex and they say you have to give up your Second Amendment rights. You can sign a piece of paper. You're still not giving up your Second Amendment rights because you can't sign away your rights. That's a legal principle. So if you can't sign away your legal rights and you have a legal right to to your own body, your own health, things like that, then what's going on here? And I know, and we'll get into this, believe me, I've got a lot of information on the PrEP Act, you know, the fact that the Secretary of Health and Human Services, you know, waved his magic hand across the world and said there's no liability, you know, during COVID because it's a public health emergency. And one of the questions we're going to be talking about today is, and we've talked about the first one, which is why is it that everybody, the government always wants to throw out constitutional rights when there's a public health emergency. The second thing I want to talk about, the second component of that, is why the government wants to throw out liability during a public health emergency. You know, and the question is, are they declaring an emergency and keeping it extended to maintain the loss of constitutional rights, which they think they can do, and the loss of liability for the people that are giving the health care? I would think, as I've argued before, that during an emergency is the time when your constitutional rights are the most important. It is the most important time to have the Constitution in full force, because that is the time that they're trying to take away your rights by declaring an emergency. In the same way, it is the most important time to have full liability on health providers during a public health emergency, because it's the most critical time where the most people would probably take advantage of it. It's like gas stations raising their price during an oil shortage. You have no idea whether those are price rises because of the oil shortage or because they felt like it, or both. You don't know. But price gouging is a problem, especially in California, because, you know, they have outrageous prices anyway. So people think they can get away with it. You know, and the thing is the same thing here. How many doctors are getting into COVID care who may not be COVID experienced or even, you know, virologists, like, for example, Dr. Fascist? It was kind of funny watching One American News last night. Pearson Sharp called him, Fascist Benito Fauci. Because I've been emailing him all the stuff we've been doing for, I don't know, about 6 months now. You know, and, of course, I call him Dr. Fascist. So I'm thinking, Pearson Sharp, did you come up with that on your own, or are you reading my Action Radio emails? I like to think he's reading our emails, but that's not the point. The point is it's catching on. Everybody's starting to call him Dr. Fascist in one form or another, which I think is funny. But let me get back to the big question. The big question is the Constitution is always enforced. There is no suspension. There is no limitation. There is no compelling public interest. There is no, you know, none of this stuff that the courts have made up to take away your constitutional rights is valid because the Constitution is still the supreme law of the land. In the same way, liability should also be paramount during an emergency every bit as much. You know, cardiac arrest is an emergency, right? Do the doctors and nurses and ambulance drivers and orderlies and anybody else who might, you know, help you out, technicians, do they get their liability waived if you have a heart attack? No. So why should their liability waive if a whole bunch of people have a COVID virus flying around? That doesn't make sense to me. So what they're saying is if one person's sick, you have liability, but if a whole bunch of people are sick, you don't? That doesn't make any sense. The liability should apply equally all the time. And this is what I'm going to be talking with Jonathan about. So let's explore liability.
Well, and the thing is, though, Greg, if I get COVID, I get cancer, if I get heart disease, if I get anything, and I go to the doctor and they want me to – they tell me what I need to do or what they need to do to make me feel better. And I say, no, I just want to eat red Skittles and green M&Ms, and that's going to make me feel better. That should be my right. I mean, is it right? May I die? I sure as heck may die. But it's like I should still have a say. If I don't want to take a certain medicine, I should have a say. The thing is they always say, you know your rights. You know the side effects. Okay, you know the side effects if I do this or if I don't do this, if I take this, if I don't take this. In COVID, we're not given any options. I mean, really, when you go to the doctor, you're not. Oh, come back if your symptoms get worse. So you don't go back until you're really having respiratory issues. And then, boom, they do the remdesivir, they put you on the vent, they do all this stuff. But it's like, why don't they do something initially, like the ivermectin? You know, and it, I don't know. I don't get it. But then all these people that have died, did they die because of they really, truly died and every effort was done to save their lives? I don't think so. I don't think so, because if you withhold treatment, and that's what NIH, whatever, that's what they're having people do because they have their own treatment plan of care, that is crap. A treatment plan of care is an individualized thing. It shouldn't be one fits all, and that's what they're doing.
I remember Dr. Shiba talked to exactly the point you're making now. He says that medicine changed, I think, 20 years ago, and they went from the standard of care being group, you know, they had group standards of care. And then what they did was they changed it and made sort of tailoring care to the individual. I mean, messenger RNA, the alleged vaccine that they're talking about now, is an individual thing. It's supposed to be, and this is what Dr. Robert Malone, who got kicked off Twitter, by the way, I found that out last night. It's kind of interesting. We can talk about that a little bit, that the man who invented the messenger RNA alleged vaccine that, you know, 2/3 of the country has taken, that guy was kicked off Twitter. And if that doesn't tell you something about big tech censorship, then nothing will. Because he's warning, you know, don't take it. Don't take his own invention, because they've screwed around with his invention and they're not using it properly. Anyway, but this whole idea of, you know, the fact that, you know, these standards of care are the problem. And this is the issue that I think we're going to have to get to over the course of the show. And we're going to talk about this a little bit. I've got the definitions of medical malpractice here, is that the things that have been recommended are the ones that are killing people. And I think that's the reason why we don't see medical malpractice lawsuits, because the hospitals and the doctors will say, well, I was just following orders. You know, I mean, I use that line purposely. Okay, that's what the Nazi concentration camp guard said, and the Holocaust guard said, well, I was just following orders. Well, that's no excuse. You know, it's like when the police violate your rights. You know, when they lock down companies and you know, they broke up my friend Larry's, you know, family gathering on his boat. The fish and game people from Florida, and he's got a video of it too. I'm not making this up. You know, they literally said, we're just following orders. You know, I had the mayor of Milton, Florida, here where I broadcast from. You know, when I asked her, I said, why are you following these ridiculous things from the CDC? They make no sense. You know, the city's banned you from doing a mask mandate. And she says, well, I'm in the chain of command. She didn't say I'm following orders, but if I remember pretty close, she says, I'm just you know, following the chain of command. I'm like, there is no chain of command. You're the mayor. You know, you don't answer to the CDC. You don't answer to the state in matters that are of concern of the mayor. But you know, that this lockstep mentality, you know, of you just got to follow in line. And so these hospitals are literally doing what they're told. And who is it who said? I think Peter McCullough. One of the doctors recently said that these people, they don't read the studies. We read more studies than a lot of doctors do. Doctors get their information from their boss, you know, their hospital, their advisories, their pharmaceutical representative, or any number of other people. They get or their local, you know, doctor association, you know, or like the society for whatever doctor, you know, ventilator doctors. That's where they get their information from. So just because they're doctors doesn't mean they're informed. Which always goes to the question. I remember a favorite question from Margaret the liberal when she used to call. You know, when I argue against the Supreme Court, she said, "Well, do you know as much as the Supreme Court? In other words, do you have the right to question the Supreme Court?" Yes, I do. You know, because they serve us, and whether I know as much as they do or not, apparently in certain cases, I know what the law says, and I know when they're not following it. So yes, you know that, you know, and so that, but this comes up, you know, how dare you question your doctor? Doctors are God. Doctors know everything. Doctors, you know, I don't think that attitude is as prevalent as it used to be. I think that's gone away a lot. Gene, do you notice that? Have you seen the trend? You know, I mean, where do doctors rate on the God chart, you know, in terms of, you know, blind worship to absolute questioning? Have you seen a change in the trends over the years? I think it's going much more to the questioning side than the blind obedience.
I think so, except where it comes to COVID. I think when it comes to COVID, it's at least initially you just do whatever they say.
Wow. Even though what they say is killing people, which gets to medical malpractice. So the question I was asking myself, and I've been asking Gene, I'm going to ask all of you too, and this is why podcasts are valuable, but live shows are better, because you can actually call in and ask the same question we're asking. We have live chat as well, so anybody wants to hop on live chat, This is Gene's baby. It's live chat. And so if you want to type in a message, either she'll respond or direct me and let me know when something's happening there. All you have to do is get yourself a free account. Just register on our broadcast page and you get yourself a live chat account. And we had a live chat from Switzerland yesterday, which is great. You know, so we you know, this show has worldwide reach, and it's going to get a lot more worldwide reach as people realize we're talking about the things that pretty much nobody else touches. I think you'd be hard-pressed to find any show in the country today talking about why there are not major medical malpractice lawsuits over COVID. Just a thought. All right. So I got a website here, the American Board of Professional Liability Attorneys. That sounds pretty official. I got to ask Jonathan about this one. The ABPLA, or ABPLA. Sorry, I amused myself. And the question is, what is medical malpractice? So according to ABPLA, the American Board of Professional Liability Attorneys, they said that medical malpractice occurs when a hospital, doctor, or other healthcare professional, through a negligent act or omission, causes an injury to a patient. The negligence might be the result of errors in diagnosis, treatment, aftercare, or health management. To be considered medical malpractice under the law, the claim must have the following characteristics. Number one, and this is the one where I think we're running into the trouble, okay? A violation of the standard of care. Before I read the definition, Gene, have you, is this something that gets bandied around that you've heard in the health professions, this idea of the standard of care, that there is a certain standard that no matter what the disease, injury, you know, fracture, whatever it is, there's pretty much a standard. You know, a lot of stuff in medicine is known. It's been done through practice, experience, history. The human body hasn't changed that much over the last, you know, several millennia, and you know, ever since we left Cro-Magnon, man became, you know, Homo sapien. So the standard of care is pretty much done for a lot of things, unless they develop a new standard, right? But there's a lot of standards of care out there which are pretty easy to follow. Would I be correct in that? See? She's working on stuff probably. All right, let me get back to you in a little bit. Let me go here for the this violation of the standard of care. All right, so this is what I think. Me personally, I think that our biggest problem with not having liability lawsuits for COVID and COVID vaccines is that that is the standard of care, and it's the standard that's wrong, not the violation of the standard. I think this is where law needs to catch up. This is why I'm curious to have Jonathan Mosley's opinion. So it says, to be considered for medical malpractice under the law, the claim must have the following characteristics. One, a violation of the standard of care. The law acknowledges that there are certain medical standards that are recognized by the profession as being acceptable medical treatment by reasonably prudent healthcare professionals under like or similar circumstances. This is known as the standard of care. A patient has the right to expect that healthcare professionals will deliver. Oh, and let me try to read that again. A patient has the right to expect that healthcare professionals will deliver care that is consistent with these standards. If it is determined that the standard of care has not been met, the negligence may be established. So here's my question for you, Gene. If the standard of care, as established by the CDC, Dr. Fascist, the NIH, and the FDA, which I think is an erroneous standard of care because I think it's based on profit. It's not based on health care. If the standard of care is wrong, then you might have a hell of a time suing for malpractice when even though that your friend, family member, cousin, you know, someone you care about deeply, public figure, whatever, you know, whomever died, there's not much you can do because they're actually following the standard of care. What do you think?
Right. No, that's true.
So would doctors be in more trouble for not following the standard of care? In other words, if they didn't follow no early treatment, remdesivir, ventilator, death, if they didn't follow that plan, would the doctors because that's the standard of care is no early treatment, remdesivir, ventilator, and death. That's the standard of care. You know, and I'm being really blunt about this for a reason. I apologize for anyone who's lost somebody to COVID and lost somebody to hospitals, but I really think we need to talk about this in blunt terms. If it's the standard of care that is killing people, if it's the standard of care that doctors are following, would doctors be in more trouble for violating the standard of care and having a patient live than they would for following the standard of care and having a patient die? How's that for a nasty question?
Right. Well, my thing is, and maybe I'm thinking about it totally wrong or looking at it totally wrong, but let's say I'm a physician and I have someone that has COVID and I look at all the research. I just don't look at Fauci, who hasn't treated a patient ever, or those types, and the people that are government run, okay, bureaucracies. Okay. Mm-hmm. If I look at all the literature out there from the different countries, look at what other countries are doing, and the reason I'm saying this is a likely answer, but looking at what they're doing, because the United States has the highest number of deaths. Isn't that correct compared to any other country in the world?
Uh-huh. Yeah, per capita. Yeah, we have the highest deaths. Yeah.
Yeah, we have.
Which is impossible if we have the best healthcare. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So you know they're doing something wrong. But let's say they have a treatment they're doing in, let's say, Zimbabwe, okay, and that treatment is working. There, those people come in there and they have a very high, I want to say, success rate, meaning the people get better and they don't die. Okay, so if you do that treatment, what they're doing, I don't see why that wouldn't be following the standard of care, because you look at it, the research shows it works. I don't understand why there's so many doctors in this country that they took the Hippocratical oath. Do no harm. Yet they're doing harm every day because they're not they're following protocol, but they're following it when they know, or they sure as heck should know. And if they don't know, we have a huge issue with the medical field and just competency in general. Because if you're doing something and it is not working, why do you keep doing it?
Yeah, that's my question. Isn't that the definition of insanity applied to medical practice?
Yes. It's applied to anything, but yes. And so it's like, so when you say that, my feeling is, or thought is, people should be able, if a doctor does his research, because even though you're done with medical school, you don't quit learning, you don't quit studying, you don't quit reading your journal. Okay? That if they find a different way to cure something, aren't you going to try it? Because you know what? What's the harm? It doesn't work. Well, we know remdesivir ventilators aren't working. And it's a heck of a lot more expensive doing that. You know, and the thing is, the government agencies, bureaucracies should not be paying hospitals to diagnose someone with a certain diagnosis. I mean, that is just awful that they're getting so much more money if it's a COVID label.
No, I agree. We're in a very bizarre situation where, you know, that's why I call this through the looking glass medicine, where death is actually more profitable than life, where following orders is not considered negligent, but saving lives is, if you save them wrong. You know, it's a very strange situation. So let's get to, we got Cindy who's going to join us in a couple of minutes here. So let's get to number two of what constitutes medical malpractice, and that is an injury caused by the negligence. Was caused by the negligence. Okay, so for a medical malpractice claim to be valid, it is not sufficient that a healthcare professional simply violated the standard of care. The patient must also prove he or she sustained an injury that would not have occurred in the absence of negligence. An unfavorable outcome by itself is not malpractice. So that's why I wouldn't have been able to sue anyway, it looks like. But I wouldn't have wanted to. So that's, you know, I reserve that for something that's really bad. Anyway,
that's
so...
That's great.
Yeah.
Okay, what happens if a family member says, I want my mom to be put on ivermectin, and they refuse to do it, and the person dies.
Yep.
To me, that is negligent from the hospital, because they didn't do what the family asked, and they can't say, oh, it went to work. We don't know it went to work because they didn't try it.
Well, it's more than that, too. It's because the preponderance of evidence shows that ivermectin does work. And so I wanted to get away for me, when I look at this, I don't think of it in terms of let's try it and see if it works. Let's try it because we know it's worked in the past for so many other people. So in other words, they've already established standard of care. I mean, there's a reason that you mentioned Zimbabwe, and I think Uganda was the country that came out and said, look, we've got, 40 people died of COVID, you know, 40, in a country of, you know, multi millions of people. You know, because everybody's taking ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine to prevent malaria. One of the side effects is that it also prevents COVID. You know, in the same way that Rogaine's a heart medicine, but it also grows hair on men. So a lot of guys are taking Rogaine to grow hair. I think Viagra came from another thing. It was supposed to be some kind of medicine that had another rather profound effect.
Well, and that's what a lot of medications are developed to do one thing, but they turn out to be better at treating something else.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And this is,
people,
you know,
that
this is why we do trials. What's that?
Right. There's people that are on migraine medicine, and a big side effect is losing weight.
Oh, that's interesting.
One of the medications, I knew someone that continued to stay on it because it was making her lose weight.
So let me ask you this then. The center of the brain where the migraine comes from is obviously some kind of a pain center. And hunger, people experience hunger as pain in their stomach. Is there a connection between the pain center for a headache and the pain center that tells you you're hungry?
Well, I don't know enough about that, but I'd say the two
is
have no correlation. I just think that it was just an offshoot of whatever ingredients are in the medication. One of those is to, I don't know what it did. If it suppressed appetite, if it, you know, it sped up metabolism, I have no idea. But,
Interesting.
Well, I didn't know she lost a lot of weight, and she was so thrilled.
Yeah, I'm losing weight too, but it's called pain. You know, I mean, I am physically very hungry at night. I'm doing the intermittent fasting thing, so I stop eating about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And I can tell you, come 8, 9 o'clock, I am ravenous, and I'm playing guitar. You know, it's usually when I do my practice, right? And I am starving, and it's a great way to take my mind off it. That plus cold water. It's a struggle every single day to do this fasting thing, and I know why people can't do it, because it's much easier just to go grab some food. You know, it's almost like an addiction. In a certain way. So you're fighting. It's a good addiction. It's a good thing we're addicted to food. Otherwise, we'd all starve to death. But the point is, you can have too much of it. And it's just fascinating to sort of go through this process now of training my body that, no, you're not going to get fed between 3, in the afternoon and 4 the next morning when I get up to get the show ready. It's quite interesting. Well, it's like 12 hours on, 12 hours off. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
The sad thing is, though, too, with food, so many of us, I think, are emotional eaters, or we eat when we're bored, or you're just used to eating at a certain time. And so are you hungry, or is it just something you did? So your body's just automatically in tune to that, wants it to happen. And it's a hard thing to change.
Food will set you free.
Yeah.
Interesting. Let me finish this one thing here on negligence. This is, the patient must prove that the negligence caused the injury. If there is an injury without negligence, or negligence that did not cause the injury, there is no case. So if you're going to have medical malpractice, you have to prove that there was negligence. Now, and again, which gets back to the standard of care. If a doctor or a hospital or a health professional who did the remdesivir ventilator death thing, they can say, well, look, I was just, that's the standard. I'm not negligent. I didn't want this person to die. I did everything I thought that I was supposed to do to help cure them. And that would be recognized as a defense in court, because this is what the standard of care is. My question is the standard, here's a question for you. This is a nasty one too. Is the standard of care what works, or is the standard of care what the government approves? And can we make a distinction in the standard of care? I don't think that distinction is being made right now. I think they're saying that the government plan is the standard, yeah. Uh-huh.
But the thing is, if a family member brings in articles and that shows that it works, and the hospital, the doctor, still refuses to try it, then what can the court say?
I don't know.
Because to me, it's like,
new
if it shows it works, and you're refusing to allow Sally or Mama, whoever, to be put on it, they die. To me, that is negligence.
I agree. I mean, but the question is, which gets back to our original question, why are there not more lawsuits? Why are there not, why is there headline-making lawsuits? You know, is the government suppressing this somehow? Is big tech suppressing it? Are there stories out there that aren't being told? I mean, I don't know. I mean, you don't know what's going on.
I really don't think there have been lawsuits. And I could be wrong, but I don't think so. I think they're probably like, nope, there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think we're going to find out.
It's not right.
I think we're going to find out when Jonathan joins us in a little bit. But looks like we've got Cindy here right now, so let's bring her on with our medical freedom report. And although she just called in, Cindy, I'm going to have you leap right into our conversation here, because I don't know if you had a chance to listen to the first half hour or whether that was coffee time. But we've been digging into this whole idea of medical malpractice and the standard of care. So just to get you caught up real quick, we're trying to figure out why there aren't more COVID medical malpractice cases. And you may want to go to my Facebook page afterwards for your page. I've got a bunch of stuff. I got like 4 or 5 different postings I made this morning. This is, like I said, it's a little bit last minute. I was sort of thinking about last night, but I want to talk to Jonathan before we did this particular segment. I want to give him a chance to take a look at it. But medical malpractice, in terms of what you know, being in the health professions, you know, before we get to your topic, why do you think there are no major lawsuits when people are being killed with what we're calling the remdesivir ventilator death cycle? Why isn't that huge?
That's a great question, and I actually posed a question on a group of lawyers yesterday, and I haven't heard a response, but kind of along the same lines of thinking is Facebook and Twitter with this censorship of doctors. Obviously, the government has been able to create a one-sided narrative through these platforms. And I'm wondering why doctors can't sue them for that very thing.
That's a great question. Can doctors sue who would the doctor sue? In other words, being forced to engage in medical malpractice. So a doctor believes that the no early treatment remdesivir ventilator death cycle is wrong, which we all believe it is. That's why we're talking about it this
way.
Right. Can
but
a doctor then say, look, this is killing patients. It's not working. 97, well, Josie says 99% of the people, she had a doctor report or a nurse report from somebody that said, from, and we're not going to name names or, you know, go into details, but that upwards of 99% of the people in this one person's experience are dying on ventilators. Well,
yeah.
That can't be, that's got to be noticed somewhere. You know, I mean,
yeah.
So why can't the doctor say, I'm not going to do this and have some kind of liability protection for, I mean, it's like there's no liability protection for curing people.
Right.
So if you cure somebody, you know, with ivermectin hydroxychloroquine, you can get fired because you didn't follow the standard of care. Whereas if you kill them, you'd be okay, liability-wise. Explain that
one. And by the same token, by not allowing them to speak and give a medical opinion, if it's a one-sided narrative and people are being injured and killed by this treatment, then don't they have the ability to say, you know, because you silenced me, X amount of people were injured or killed?
I got a question, though, too, and I don't know the term of it, but, you know, on a doctor cannot own a therapy company. A doctor cannot have any stake in a drug company, or they're not supposed to, because just because of their kickbacks, possibly, or whatever. Well, if a hospital's getting a kickback from diagnosing someone with COVID and using remdesivir and ventilators, I think that should be illegal. So I think people should be able to sue for that because they're getting money for doing it a certain way, which if a doctor can't do that, then, you know, for anything other than COVID, then why can they do it for COVID?
Cindy?
Yeah, I'm not a lawyer.
So you don't have to know the remember. You don't have to know the answers. You just have to be able to
engage
in the discussion. So you know, we don't have all the answers here. Yeah,
they're great questions, and it is. I'm wondering why there isn't more being done in the legal venue to stop some of this, or at least you know, slow momentum or set new precedents.
Well, that's exactly what I'm going for. This is why I waited till Thursday to do this, because I've got you with the Medical Freedom Report, and I got Jonathan Mosley, who's our legal expert, being a criminal defense attorney. You know,
let's get him on.
Well, he's gonna be it's 7:30, so we got another 43 minutes until we get the man himself, the one and only Jonathan Mosley, who has the longest theme, by the way. Of I haven't made your theme. I gotta make your theme here, but but this is why I put it. It's really great to have both of you on for this particular topic. So if you want to call back, stick around, whatever you want to do is fine. Well, listen, if you have to listen to the podcast, that's cool too. And you can always, you know, message me questions and or type in live chat. That works as well. So you have a live chat account, and if you have to leave,
that is going to be my question, because I posed it yesterday in a group and I haven't gotten an answer, but it stemmed from Section 230, and I know I couldn't remember if it was last year or the year before that, you know, there was a lot of talk, and I thought action was being taken to remove Section 230 protection from, you know, things like Facebook and Twitter, and then it seemed to kind of die down. Well, they're using that very protection to, my understanding is, avoid any legal responsibility. So if that's the case, and I thought that action was being taken to change that. Well, that didn't happen. I want to know why that hasn't happened, and if something has changed, why are people not suing them? Why are doctors not able to sue them for being censored and preventing, you know, medical information that could possibly save lives?
Yeah, well, that's Section 230 is a whole different kettle of fish. Let me I just happen to have written a bill on this. We have two major bills that I'm hoping you'll give to these doctors. In fact, I'm hoping you'll invite some of them on next week. And this goes for the medical groups that you work with as well. The first one is the amendments to Section 230, eliminating censorship from big tech. And the second one, Actually, there's three of them now that I think about it. The second one is full product liability on vaccine manufacturers. I've got that bill. I was sharing that one last night again. And the third one is the bill that Dr. Zelenko and I wrote, which reforms the emergency use authorization procedure so that both Congress and the president can make emergency declarations. And under that bill, had it passed last August, a year ago, not this August, but the one in 2020, back when I wrote it, with Dr. Zelenko, then Trump could have authorized hydroxychloroquine and our pandemic would have been over in about 3 weeks. And so this is the power of citizen legislation. But, just as Einstein said that, a new idea is 2% inspiration, 98% perspiration. We've got the 2% inspiration. That's already done. We've done our part here at Action Radio. What we need is the 98% inspiration of people sharing it. that's really simple. Share the bill with Congress, share the bill with media, call talk shows, bring it to groups like hearing and things like that. So let's go over big tech censorship. So Section 230 was a bill to create a good faith exemption for big tech to be able to regulate what goes on their sites. Okay, that's the problem. See, what they have is they have two things that they should have, one or the other. Either they should have good faith and exemption and be fully liable for what they remove, or they should be immune from liability by providing the service and not be able to touch what you post. Okay, so what they have now is both. They have the ability they have complete immunity from whatever they do to touch your post. So that's where the problem is. So whereas the phone company, and Mike Huckabee was the one that gave this example, back in the old days, the phone company didn't care, regulate, even know what you said on the phone lines. That was private communication. So you could advocate horrible things, illegal things, hurting the president, overthrowing the government. You could say whatever you wanted and nobody really cared because it was on a phone line, right? So AT&T was not responsible for going, oh, wait a minute, you said something illegal, we're going to go after you. Whereas big tech is different because that stuff's open. I mean, the internet's completely open. So big tech, Congress thought in their infinite wisdom to be able to take to give big tech the ability to censor. Or let me read you exactly what it says here, because it's really pretty disgusting. So what it really comes down to is 230 Section C. It's called protection for, quote, good Samaritan blocking and screening of offensive material. So here's the first part, treatment of publisher or speaker. So in other words, what these are called is they're called interactive computer services, right? That's what it's called under law. So search engines, Google, DuckDuckGo, all those things. That's one part of interactive computer services. Social media is the second part of interactive computer services. In other words, we interact with each other or we interact with a company over the internet and they provide a service. Okay. That's an interactive computer service. And it basically search engines and social media. So the law, U.S. Code Title 47, Section 230, section subpart C, little c by the way, subpart 1. Okay, in case anybody wants to look up the law, there it is. Title 47, Section 230, Subsection C1. That's where it is, all right? Protection for Good Samaritan blocking and screening of offensive material. 1, treatment of publisher or speaker. No provider or user of an interactive computer service shall be treated as a publisher or speaker of any information provided by another information content provider. Basically, they're not liable. They're not publishers. See, if you're a publisher, all right, so say you're the New York Times and you completely lie through your teeth. Well, they do that anyway. They're liable for that. If they say, Donald Trump sleeps with fuzzy blue teddy bears. and that's wrong, which it probably is. I don't know. Maybe he does or doesn't. It doesn't matter. But the thing is, if they say that and Donald Trump does not sleep with fuzzy blue teddy bears, he can sue the New York Times because they're liable for that because they're a publisher. All right. Now, if Facebook says that Donald Trump sleeps with fuzzy blue teddy bears, they're not liable because they're not a publisher. They've got immunity under Section 230. See how it works? All right. Mm-hmm. Now, civil liability. Here's the bad part too. This is Title 47, Section 230, subsection C2, civil liability. No provider or user of an interactive computer service shall be held liable on account of any action voluntarily taken in good faith, whatever that means, to restrict access to, there's your censorship, or availability of material, there's your censorship again, that the provider or user considers to be obscene, lewd, lascivious, filthy, excessively violent, harassing, or, and here's the key words, otherwise objectionable. That's where your fact checks and walking of conservatives comes in, all right? Whether or not such material is constitutionally protected, or B, any action taken to enable or make available to information content providers or others the technical means to restrict access. Okay, right. The first one is A. So in other words, this is so they're not liable because they're not publishers under current law, okay? And they can act in good faith. So they could say, well, we had to block the conservatives. We had to take Robert Malone off Twitter. You know, he was saying things that we don't think is true. He was saying that Sesame Street using Big Bird to push vaccines to make, you know, little drug users out of the kids of America. That's offensive. Yeah. But even though we think that using Sesame Street is offensive. So in other words, anything they think is, quote, otherwise objectionable, if act in, quote, good faith, they can do anything they want. So section, here you go, folks. Title 47, section 230, subpart C2A. That's where it is. Good faith and otherwise objectionable. That's the problem right there. So do you have to fix all of section 230? No. Do you have to put a whole bunch of antitrust laws on big tech to break them up and do all kinds of other stupid things? No. Do you have to massively regulate with a whole huge code of regulations to make sure there's no censorship but still keep this provision in place? No. So the Action Radio solution, the easy one, is to simply rewrite a couple of those sections. So the way it should now read, if in fact this is our Section 230 amendment, it says Section 230C would now read, C, protection for users from providers and civil liability protection for providers of interactive computer services. Treatment of publisher or speaker. No provider or user of an interactive computer service shall be treated as the publisher or speaker of any information provided by another information, content provider. So that's pretty much from the main one. Okay. So in other words, nobody's treated as a publisher. There's your liability protection. Neither the provider nor the user, you know, can be treated as a publisher. Okay. Civil liability. And here we go. This is the part that, I mean, it's a little confusing. Actually, that's pretty much the same one. I get confused in my own legislation. So civil liability. So I deleted the current parts A and B and replaced them with the following. So the civil liability section, you may have to listen to the podcast for this to make sense to you. I apologize.
Yeah, my head is spinning.
Okay, well, all right. I'm trying to make this simple. I think I'm making it more complicated. Let me just read you the two parts. A, no provider of interactive computer services shall be liable for any action, interaction, anything post, or any content from or by any user of interactive computer services. What that means is the providers, big tech, you know, all the social media and the search engines, they're not liable for anything that's post or any content from what they're putting out there.
Okay.
So in other words, if you use Facebook, okay, if you post on Facebook, you're not, you know, they're not liable for anything you post on Facebook, okay?
Right.
But here's the kick, though. B, any infringement, interaction, or interference, no matter how minuscule, with the actions, interactions, postings, or content of any user of interactive computer services by any interactive computer services provider shall void and revoke civil liability protection from that provider. So in other words, they're immune from liability so long as they don't touch anything that you post. Now, but Greg, what about all the objectionable material? What about all the lewd, lascivious, filthy, disgusting, excessively violent, stuff like that? Well, that's already covered by the obscenity laws. Okay? Especially the most obnoxious and disgusting and vile things like child pornography. That's already covered. That's already in federal law. You don't have to make anything illegal twice. So you can remove all the ability of big tech to touch anything post on social media or look up on a search engine. You can remove, you can stop them from touching anything. You can keep them their liability. And as long as they don't mess with what you do, then they're fine. They keep their liability because anything that you post that might be disgusting, lewd, lascivious, filthy, you know, or illegal is already covered by laws.
Mm.
That's a long way of saying. That's a long way of saying, can you just share the bill? So if you share the bill, all that will make sense to people. All right.
I think,
haven't even touched the liability one yet. Yeah, okay. I get caught up in my own stuff sometimes. You know, it's funny. When you write a bill like this, you have to literally sit down and go over word by word by word. And the problem is, I've written maybe like 40 of the bills on my site. And so I forget the exact wording. I really have to study it myself before going. So if you're confused, I apologize. Pianki's on the line too. Let's see if Pianki can make some sense of this. What you wanted to talk about. Pianki, you want to join in on our Section 230 thing? or anything else we've talked about?
Well, yes, you know, you make a mention about Section 230, which prevents big tech from infringing on our First Amendment rights.
Well, it doesn't, though.
And some people think that big tech should have the ability to do that. Well, what about in the libraries when they put sexual explicit material in schools? And the parents want to take it out. But the school district, the board, and also the librarian put it right back in.
Then parents have to, supervise their kids better. This is,
it's the same thing. People will be objective to your bill, which I think is a good bill, because it protects your rights. But on the other hand, in this case with this objectionable material and explicit material that's being exposed to young children in elementary schools, if they don't want the parents to have the right to say, I don't want my child to see this. Same thing with critical race theory material. Parents say they don't want their children to be exposed to that.
But just as we have to keep the internet open for adults. You see, we don't make laws for kids in terms of the freedom for adults. And so adults have to have the freedom to look up anything they want, to post what they want, however controversial. And if they post something that's illegal, it's not up to big tech to censor it. It's up to law enforcement. Through the obscenity laws and through the child pornography laws. And through that's how those things are taken care of. Just as if you post a poster or if you did something public in some way that whatever public way you did it, whether you're standing on a street corner or holding up obscene, excessively violent, if you're holding up an actual murder, on a big poster, okay, that's illegal. For some reason, I'm not sure what it comes under exactly, but you can't do that as far as I know. Well, maybe you can. I'm not sure. Anyway, point being that it's not up to big tech to police what goes into big tech, just as it's not up to the phone company to police what's said over their phone lines, landlines, or cell phones. It's not up to big tech to police what's posted on social media. That's not their role. If they want their immunity, then they can't touch what you post. If they do touch what you post, then they become publishers and they have liability. See, they want their cake and eat it
too.
That's the problem. Go ahead. What's that?
And showing jet planes running into a building is showing murder.
Oh, that's true, yeah. Yeah. So obviously that comment, see, this is the problem with live radio. I'm not going to go back and edit it, but so that was what I call a mistake.
Yeah.
something we need to think through. Cindy, let's get to you.
No, we need to build a control.
Go ahead, quickly.
You need to build a control of Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter.
No, you don't.
We need to build a control of people and make it illegal for you to be able to sue these social media entities that they do the things, continue to do the things that they've been getting away with.
Yeah. No, what we need to do is what that bill does. In other words, give them liability so long as they don't touch what you post. Because if anything is that bad that you post, it's already covered by obscenity laws. That's basically what, Cindy, that's what I should have said the first time. I'm sorry. So let's get back. I want to get to you because I want to make sure, just in case you have to leave in a few minutes, I want to make sure we cover what you want to cover. So let's get back to you. What's on your mind today? Bianca, don't go away, though. We'll get back to that issue. Cindy?
Well, I would love to hear a legal mind talk about why the current situation, it seems like the perfect storm for the narrative that the government is using with these social media platforms, and inquiring minds would like to know why that's not being touched from a legal censorship point of view, from a medical doctor that's being silenced.
And here's the thing too: you don't have to be a lawyer to analyze that. This is one of the biggest parts of this show, biggest things I want to do with Action Radio is to have anybody realize, and this includes you specifically this morning, realize that you don't have to be a lawyer to read the law, that it's not that complicated, that you can write legislation, that you can understand these things. And when folks like Margaret the Liberal, who I'm not going to have on the show anymore for all kinds of reasons, but when folks come on or when you talk to people to say, well, you do you know more than the doctors? Do you know more than the Supreme Court? Do you know more than these people? Well, that's not the question. What they're really saying is, do you have a right to question? And of course, yes, you do. So it's not a question whether you know more than these people. You're a human being with a brain, and you have the right to question. So that means you can question, you know, why can't doctors say what they want? Why can't doctors practice medicine? I mean, which is higher, the Hippocratic Oath or the CDC? I think it's the Hippocratic Oath. Okay. So what is more important? If you save a patient, all right, and if you have a procedure that you establish that saves patients like Dr. Zelenko did when he wrote The President, you know, back in like, I think it was March or April of 2020, when he said, look, this stuff, hydroxychloroquine, it works. I've saved, you know, a whole bunch of people in my community, which he did. Okay. You know, and but yet he got banned for saying that. Why would you, how can you possibly get banned for saying something works and have something that doesn't work be promoted as government policy?
That's the question. That's the question I have, because basically by Facebook choosing which doctors they allow a platform, they're essentially being medical doctors. They're deciding medically what information the public should be hearing.
Now, this is a brilliant point. Well, it's a brilliant point because Facebook, in effect, is practicing medicine without a license, because medicine involves, at first, the first priority of medicine is good information. So patients can have informed consent. Well, you can't be informed, you know, to give your consent if you're not being informed properly. Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Take that to your doctors. If I give them this podcast. say, hey, guys, what do you think of this? But there's the question. Is not social media is withholding medical information, especially medical information we know saves lives, are they not, in fact, practicing medicine without a license, and can they be held liable for the deaths of people because they misinformed them?
Yeah, I mean, when you look at you know, every aspect of our lives right now and very important aspects, legally, medically, Facebook and Twitter and those platforms, they're kind of dictating every aspect of how we obtain information, the information that we do obtain. They're practicing medicine, they're practicing law, and what makes them, qualified when...
Good question.
You know, medical doctors and lawyers are being silenced.
Yeah. Well, it's like Jean's point when she was saying, you know, what is it? Why can't doctors, you know, own therapy places and things like that? I think what you're looking for is conflict of interest. Okay? It's a conflict of interest to do something that you're not professionally able to do. It's a conflict of interest for Dr. Fascist, who has neither a virology degree nor a microbiology degree, to be heading up the Center for Infectious Diseases. You want to talk about a conflict of interest? That actually, because he has no knowledge, he has no educational base for what he's doing.
That seems malpractice.
And cannot he be challenged? In fact, the fact that he's issuing these stupid guidelines that people are ridiculously following, like blind, you know, Nazis or communists, you know, can he be held liable? Well, I think he could. I mean, the man's killed more people than the Civil War, you know.
So then the question is, why is it not being pursued? Why is there not class action suits with these doctors or individual doctors suing because they've their ability to practice medicine, as the government is practicing medicine, as Fauci is practicing medicine on these social media platforms?
Because they would be ostracized with their association if they are members of
doctors. I want to get your point in a second. Yeah, take that to the doctor, Cindy. Take that to your doctor groups and take it to your medical freedom groups, and let's find out. That's an excellent question. Okay, Pianki, I want to spend a minute with your part because it's a good point.
Yeah, I mean, the same thing with 9/11. You had engineers that did not agree with the popular narrative, but they could not speak out because they stood a chance of being denied having their license. In the states that they operated in, I had the ability to operate in, denied them.
Well, there are whistleblower laws that cover people like that, to protect people like that. Well, allegedly. I mean, we have, Jay D'Onofrio and I, Jay, who used to work for the VA while he was there, and a bunch of other folks like Dr. Alice Buckley and a couple of other people, we actually wrote real liability protection for VA whistleblowers, you know, that actually fixed the VA, the Veterans Administration Whistleblower Act. But there is whistleblower protection for engineers to come forward and say, wait a minute, You know, this thing collapsed from the bottom. It didn't collapse from the top. You know, what the hell's going on here? You know, or just the ability to question what's going on. You know, that there are whistleblower protection laws that supposedly cover these people. Same thing with doctors. Well, here's one. Cindy, do you know of any whistleblower doctor protection laws?
You
or
know,
do we have
I
to write one?
I don't
Do we
know.
Have to write one? Do we have to write one?
Could be. I'll look Ooh. Into that. I would
yeah.
think if there are whistleblower laws, that mm-hmm. it would cover any, what's the word?
Protection? Limit of liability?
Field, yeah. Whether it's construction, medical,
mm-hmm.
But I will look into that. Lots going on, though. We know CMS, that their mandate kicked back in yesterday, which was, you know, no surprise. I mean, I don't know that any of us didn't expect that it was going to happen.
CMS,
but,
let's clarify that for people. The Center for Medicare Systems. They're the folks that dish out money.
Medicare and Medicaid.
Okay.
They're the ones that pay hospitals, nursing homes, and whatnot for treatment. And they have reversed their stay on the 100 employees or more needing to be vaccinated or tested weekly. That's now gone back into effect. So places like Ascension, Sacred Heart, it'll be interesting to see, you know, what kind of mass exodus, again, there is for employees not wanting the vaccine.
Well, there's a Supreme Court hearing on this January 7th. I guess nobody wants to do anything January 6th. Yeah, there's a major Supreme Court case. So I'll tell you, if these folks like Ascension and some of these other bigger hospital chains are smart, and I think they are because, you know, they've got their bottom line money interest at heart no matter what, that they're going to hold off until the Supreme Court weighs in. And the Supreme Court's going to deal with this very quickly because there are too many cases. There's too many cases of judge leapfrogging, I'm calling it. In other words, one judge says it's okay to have vaccine mandates. The next judge higher up says, no, it's not. Then the next court, then the court of appeals says, yes, it is. And then the higher court of appeals says, no, it's not. You know, and they're going back and forth. It's a mess. It's a mess, right? Nobody knows what to believe because the courts keep leapfrogging themselves. And so it's going to be the Supreme Court is going to have to issue an opinion, mostly for the court system. You know, and then Congress is going to have to step in. Well, they can't because they're a bunch of you've got Marxists and geldings in Congress. I don't hold much faith in them. Is that a pretty good description? I mean, Democrat, Marxist, and GOP gelding. The gelding old party, that's what I call them. They're useless. If you don't know what gelding means, look it up. Obviously, Cindy does.
No, I do. I'm very familiar with that term.
Exactly. Yeah, why would you do that to a perfectly happy horse? I mean, I don't know. I'm sorry. It just all of them in the world who are listening are just going, yeah, thanks. Anyway, but it removes a certain, you know, character. So the difference between stallion and gelding is obvious. But it also goes to, you think of stallions as running free and being independent and strong and, you know, wind in their face and the mane streaming back. You know, geldings passively sit there and haul carts. I mean, there's your Republican Party. So it seems to be an appropriate metaphor. Cindy's still laughing over it. Come on, Cindy, get back here. We need you.
I haven't had my coffee.
So you're supposed to do that before the show, before you come on.
Y'all are early birds.
You can have your coffee during, you know.
Yeah.
I don't care.
Yeah.
You know, I usually, but I'm up at 4, so to me, I'm already halfway through my workday.
you guys are, one pot ahead of me.
probably, yeah. Yeah, and then there's the rest of the day for the rest of the show. There's lots to do. Well, let's get to something, medical discrimination. So there's a lesser form of the malpractice that's going on. I think the real malpractice is forcing doctors to do things that they know kills people. That to me is murder.
Or preventing them from offering care that would help or prevent someone's death.
Yeah. So you've got some 500 doctors, according to Peter McCullough at the Joe Rogan. Oh, Robert Malone's going to be on Joe Rogan today too, so I'm going to have to listen to that after my show. But that might be something that's fun to hear as well. He just got banned from Twitter. So anybody that tells the truth, gets blocked off Twitter. And so my Section 230 would apply to that, and he could sue the hell out of them for doing that. if we had Microbelt already in place, because they would then become they would have lost their liability immunity simply because they censored somebody touching their content, touching their account. And so that's where my law would apply, in the simplest form. Sorry for the long explanation. I get down my own rabbit hole sometimes. But medical discrimination, let's talk about let's get to a really basic level. There is I think they call it in like First Amendment law, a chilling effect. So a chilling effect is the thing you didn't say because you thought someone might object to it maybe. A chilling effect doesn't stop you. It's like you stopping you from saying something. So the doctor that might have said something in a free speech environment saying, hey, look, I've discovered this. You know, I've discovered this wonderful drug. It cures this. I tried it on a patient and it works. It's great. We did the research. It's wonderful. They're not going to say that now. You know, only the courageous ones are. So the rest of the doctors, he said there's 500 doctors who are brave enough to have cured 150,000 patients with early treatment for COVID, okay? So that's 500 doctors out of a million, okay? And that's 150,000 people cured versus 800,000 killed. Well, actually 700,000 killed. They say that, well, what's 90% of 800,000? 90% would be 80,000, that would be 720,000 people killed who could have been saved. And, you know, out of 800,000. So anyway, what point being that most of the people could have been saved who've died, you know, either from or with COVID, saved from the COVID, you know, through early treatment. That we know. So point being, but if a doctor can't say that, you know, there's the chilling effect. And they might get a shift change. They might go from, you know, working in the trauma center to, I don't know, to work in the desk checking people in. I mean, you know, what is going on in the medical profession now to have a chilling effect on free speech and free treatment in terms of medical discrimination?
To me, it seems like lawlessness.
Okay. But what's actually happening to doctors? What do you know of people who've been taken off schedules or taken off duties or switched departments?
Oh, absolutely.
That's what I want to know about. Without names.
What are they doing? And medical discrimination now seems to be a very acceptable environment, especially in hospitals. But even here in our own area, several months ago, we have a nurse that works for Sacred Heart or did work for Sacred Heart Medical – or not Sacred Heart, Santa Rosa Medical Center. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she – didn't get the vaccine, wrote a religious exemption.
Mm-hmm.
It was denied, and she was agreeable to testing if they were going to test everyone, not just the unvaccinated. And she had these conversations with the CEO of Santa Rosa Medical Center, and their own literature that they put out acknowledged that both vaxxed and unvaxxed employees could give and get COVID. So her argument was, I'll test, but I want you to test both vaxxed and unvaxxed, and that was not acceptable. So she was just removed indefinitely from the schedule. To this day, she hasn't been fired.
So she can't work somewhere else. She can't work somewhere else because she's still employed by these people, and they probably have non-competitive clauses where they can't go work for other hospitals, and yet she can't work for the place that she's employed by. Oh, isn't that interesting?
Yeah, well, and Ascension, with their rules, month and a half ago when they their deadline came, I think it was November 11th, they had a trauma surgeon, actually, who didn't take the vaccine, and he was put on indefinite leave, and then they had a reversal of allowing religious and medical exemptions and brought him back. Well, he had, I believe it was two director positions in the hospital. Well, you know, he came back, and those positions were taken. They had given them to someone else. So, yeah, he was brought back as an employee, but essentially demoted.
Well, he should sue.
Yeah, he should. Jackie, go ahead.
Good point. In the beginning of what you were describing, when they denied his religious they have no right to deny a person's religious thoughts. They have no right to do that. Why come they don't sue? If a police officer out here steps on somebody's toe, especially somebody black, they sue the heck out of the department. So people have to do likewise.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, Pianki, one of the problems, and I talked to Cindy about this, and we've talked about it on the show, and this is why I wrote the two bills that I wrote for the that special session of the Florida legislature, one on creating a parental bill of rights that actually was a bill of rights, not a bill of rights subject to the whims of the legislature. Same thing with putting the public health departments, squarely under the Constitution and making informed consent the most important priority, is the fact that the state can do some pretty horrible things when it comes to doctor discrimination. I lost track wherever it was going. I had a real point that I was trying to make. So anyway, back up here. This is what happens when my head floods with too many topics at once. But there was something. Where was it going to go? So what were we just talking about? Let's have an
well, medical discrimination and how it's now become acceptable to discriminate with your employees between vaxxed and unvaxxed. I have been on a loudspeaker about that for months, that we're now becoming a society that accepts discrimination. And it is medical discrimination because you're being excluded to – I think I saw yesterday that they're arresting people in New York trying to go to a Burger King because they don't have a vax pass. Well, first of all, my medical status is none of Burger King's business, but two, as a society, we're okay with the fact that we're not going to allow customers to eat at Burger King because they don't have a certain vaccine. I was reading last night how, they went above and beyond making laws for HIV and AIDS patients in the workforce and whatnot, and that's deadly as far as I know. Why is it acceptable to put people out of work and allow them or prevent them from dining and whatnot for something that has a 99.9% survivability? It's changed our thought process as a society, where somebody with AIDS and HIV, which is, a pretty serious disease, gets legal protection, and you're as an employer forced to provide them certain protections and guarantee them employment and privacy. Yet for COVID, with a 99.9% survivability, we're okay to, put them on indefinite leave, subject them to testing and ask them about their health status. It's amazing to me. And I'm wondering where all the lawyers are.
Yeah, that's a good question. But the politics of AIDS, you had the gay lobby was very active in making sure that this became something that you could not discriminate against. In many
and
respects, they're right.
Well,
but the politics of COVID is completely different.
Let me ask you guys a question. Would you share a needle with somebody who has AIDS? Yes or no?
I wouldn't share a needle.
Let me ask you this.
I wouldn't share a glass of water.
Okay, then let me ask you this then. A mosquito has a natural needle. When he bite a person with AIDS, he does not sanitize his needle before he come bite you.
It's always the she. Sorry, I just had to throw that in. Go ahead, Bianca.
I mean, think about it. So if you got people with AIDS out there in the public, and mosquito bite them, and he flies over and bites you, now he has transmitted the disease to you.
Well, that's how all kinds of diseases, Zika, tsetse flies do sleeping sickness. There's malaria is one of the biggest ones that mosquitoes transmit. I don't know if AIDS is transmissible by mosquitoes. I mean, if mosquitoes could transfer diseases, they transfer every disease. But they don't do that. There's certain ones that they're able to transfer. or transmit.
Well, then what happens to the disease that's on his – he sucked your blood. And
right.
Surely
she.
He's not – he don't
she.
Have to swab it in his needle.
Yeah.
Well, that's she, a, what, it has.
How are you going to sue mosquitoes? Yeah. Who says we don't have fun?
Well,
here?
We're talking right. about the whole idea,
uh-huh.
Craig. If you can use a one idea, which is
right.
ridiculous, to explain a ridiculous action, well, then you got to use and say, well, what about this? The same
well,
thing is eventually happening.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and
yeah.
we're not segregating HIV employees from non-HIV employees in the cafeteria. I mean, there is a guaranteed level of privacy and respect guaranteed to, you know, people with AIDS and HIV that, you know, you could argue is justifiable or isn't justifiable, but why have we thrown that out the window for something like COVID with a 99.9% survivability?
Well, here's a question. COVID has, and we're still under, at least at the federal level, a public health emergency declaration. And once they do that, this is when a lot of government people felt, as Pianki especially talked about, you know, the Constitution doesn't have an on and off switch. The government uses emergency declarations to curb your rights, which is completely illegal. And the second thing they do is limit liability. They limit liability for health professionals, which is also I should be completely illegal. So they're using the public health emergency. Now, I don't think AIDS was ever declared if there was a public health emergency declared under AIDS. I mean, it was definitely something that was a problem. That was a major health problem. But I don't remember ever being. In fact, Gene, if you have a chance to look this up, was there ever declared a public health emergency requiring government action during the entire AIDS crisis? I mean, it's definitely a crisis, but it's much more localized. It was localized to, you know, San Francisco, New York, and you know, and generally gay men and intravenous drug users. You couldn't even say that politically. Yeah, you know, it's interesting that
let me ask you another question.
That. Yeah, go ahead.
Can you transmit AIDS with bodily fluids?
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Then why come AIDS patients or people that has AIDS, why come they not required to wear masks?
Ooh, that's a good question.
It's the same bodily fluid transmission that you are expending with COVID. It's the same thing if you have AIDS.
Yeah, it's interesting that Matt, AIDS pays, you know, AIDS, I say victims or carriers or people with an AIDS condition. Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, because now does AIDS spread in an aerosol? You can't say
that. I believe
that.
That's where the caveat is, that it's not aerosolized.
Not transmissible. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I think it has to be bodily fluids. I mean, a lot of diseases have to,
it has
you know,
to be.
They can't go out in the air because they can't survive in the air. Yeah, go ahead.
When somebody sneezes, can you smell their breath?
Yeah.
Well, then, it's the same thing. You smelling the breath is further vaporized than the liquid itself.
Yep.
Well, and,
yeah.
I mean,
well,
people don't think no more. You know, this. You know, it's look at a society today, Greg. People in society don't use analytical thinking. That has been taught out of young people who grows into adults who are just prone for left, right, uppercut punches.
Yeah.
And they rock and reel from them.
Well, that's a lot of the basis for this show. And this is why I liked having Dave on. I guess Dave's on holiday, our young reporter. You know, who's still in school just for that purpose, to sort of get the idea of what's going on. He's different because he's homeschooled. And now he's private schooled. And so that makes a huge difference. But yeah, they're, I mean, critical thinking skills literally are taking away your ability to think critically. You know, the critical skills that are needed for thinking are the things that critical thinking skills remove. So this is why we deal in logic and reason. On this show, we don't deal with, you know, as much as possible, too many emotional arguments. You know, COVID, I mean, fear. I mean, fear is one of the worst emotions for analyzing anything. Because if you're in fear, you can't analyze anything because if fear overtakes you. And Cindy, I completely forgot the point I was going to make earlier. I'll probably think about it after the show.
A person with AIDS or anything else that walks into a Burger King and they have sweaty palms and they're at the table eating and their sweaty palms are touching the table. They get up and leave and then you sit there. Well, how long does the AIDS last on the surface? Does it last 5 minutes longer or 5 minutes less than COVID?
Well, I think unless it's cleaned off, I think it'll last a couple of days. But here's another one, too.
But
tuberculosis from illegal aliens.
They don't clean those tables off immediately.
No, they don't. But, you know, that's why we have an immune system, which is something we get back to. Here's a bigger problem, I think, because I think AIDS has been really well controlled. You know, once we got away from AZT and Dr. Fascist and they actually started using drugs that worked, like Bactrin and some of the other things, you don't hear a lot of people dying from AIDS these days, certainly not celebrities like they used to, like Freddie Mercury. I still contend that Dr. Fascist killed Freddie Mercury by his stupid AZT treatments and the fact that they weren't studying Bactrin and some of the other things. You know, it took 2 years to get that on the market, and 17,000 AIDS patients died. I think it's PCP, the pulmonary cardio. You know, basically the same thing that remdesivir and ventilators do. So Dr. Fascist has a long track record of death and destruction everywhere he goes. Anyway.
Well, and I would argue, look at the laws that they were able to enact for mm-hmm. AIDS during that time. And
yeah, but
was it what it was because it was uncontrollable, or was it what it was to be able to enact the laws that came out of that? A crisis used to shape society, shape laws,
Well, there's the politics, there's the medicine, and I think it's something that happens with COVID, too. The politics of AIDS was, you know, people were labeling it a disease of gay men and intravenous drug users. Well, as it turned out, it was a disease of gay men and intravenous drug users, okay? Those were the predominant populations that were spreading the AIDS virus.
And that wasn't nearly as acceptable back then as it is now.
Yeah, but that's the reality. The medical science and the politics are different. So the political, the politics of COVID is completely different than the actual science of COVID. The politics mm-hmm. of COVID is follow the chain of command. You know, don't do early treatments. Follow Dr. Fascist. You know, do the no early treatment, remdesivir, ventilator, death cycle. That's the political side. Go ahead.
Look what it's enabling them to do in our society. It's changing mm-hmm. our culture. It's you know, allowing mm-hmm. us now to accept discrimination. There's a lot of things being formed out of this current crisis.
Yep. Well, it's the politics.
Let me ask you guys another question.
Oh, yeah,
because you guys know more than I do. So in order to get into a Burger King in New York, I have to show a vaccine passport, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, why come I didn't have to show the vaccine passport as illegal when I crossed the southern border?
Well, that's the point I was going to make. You can have an illegal, in fact, I'm sure we have tons of illegals coming in with tuberculosis and other communicable diseases that can walk
and
anywhere
COVID.
In New York they want, and COVID. Yeah, but the thing is that you can have tuberculosis and walk anywhere you want, which is extremely communicable. You know, it's a very dangerous disease and has a much lower survival rate than COVID does, as far as I know.
Yeah.
We can look that up.
Yeah.
But that's okay. See, it's the politics. The politics of COVID is control. The disease, the virus itself is not that big a deal because, as you said, it's got a 99.95% average survival rate. And I wouldn't say, I mean, something that high more than survival,
really
it's not even
myself.
Consequential. You know, but some
I
of these
get
other
tired
things,
of hearing it. If people don't know that by now, I don't know what to tell you.
Well,
people in New York should be protesting. They should have signs that say this. Mm-hmm. I got a passport, but I got AIDS. I got a passport, but I got TB.
I love that.
That's a great idea. Yeah. In fact, we should make a big posting too. You know, vaccine passport. You know, for COVID shots. However, you know, TB, AIDS, other transmissible diseases. You know, fair game. So we change the Statue of Liberty. Bring us your tired, you're hungry. Bring us your TB, your malaria.
And one other
your,
thing
your
you
measles.
Need to add. I got a passport, but I got stupidity.
Yeah.
Well, I was threatening earlier in the year that if people started asking me for my vaccination status, I was going to tell them, you know, I'm not able to get the vaccine because it contradicts the medicines I'm taking for AIDS.
That's a great one. Yeah, I'm sorry, I can't have the vaccine because it interferes with my malaria.
Yeah.
What? Yeah, that's
and,
you know,
and
I mean,
leave
you can just
them
make
with
stuff
that.
Up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But politics,
that,
what
I
politics
mean,
has
it
done?
It has become that ridiculous.
Yeah, but politics, there was no lockdown. There were no mask mandates. There were no mandatory vaccines for AIDS. You know, this is a political disease, and it's actually a marketing plan. And here's where it gets even worse. So we've got politics, we've got the actual medicine, which we've talked about. This is a survivable virus. This is, you boost your immune system, you're probably going to be fine, and we have early treatments to cure it. That's the medicine. The politics is there is no early treatment. You know, you need to go on the remdesivir or ventilator death cycle. That's the mm-hmm. politics. The economics is we're going to push vaccines on everybody, which aren't a treatment. Dr. McCullough said vaccines aren't a treatment. They're at best a preventative, maybe. Okay. And then, you know, so you got the economics from the vaccine, you got the politics from the lockdowns, masks, and vaccine masks, which lead to the economics, but the actual medicine of this is getting lost all the way through.
Yeah.
You remember when Magic Johnson first announced he had AIDS? Los Angeles Lakers basketball.
He's still around, isn't he? He's still doing fine, right? As far as I know,
when that became known, players mm-hmm. didn't want to play with him.
Yeah.
Because if we come in contact with his sweaty body, we can get the AIDS. Well, the same thing applies when a person with AIDS go into a Burger King and put their mm-hmm. hands and palms on a desk.
Yeah, I don't think the virus is that transmissible.
Do people think anymore? Greg, I asked you your question. Gene, jump in here. Do people think anymore?
No. Well,
no,
they do on this show. But that's
you're bringing
people,
up a lot of really good points.
Good, Gene.
Yeah. No, I just say, Pionk is bringing up a lot of good points. It's just got to shake your head or hit your head against the wall and just say, how do we get to this?
Yeah, good question. Hey, let me change things around a little bit because we ask that question pretty much every day, and I want to keep asking it too because our filter here is simple: logic, reason, and evidence. And that's what we go on. All right. So I found something from Morgan & Morgan. You guys are going to like this, right? Morgan & Morgan, the biggest personal injury lawsuit company in the country. They have a section on coronavirus lawsuits. Okay, it's on my Facebook page, so you guys can all dig it up. And they're talking about the coronavirus pandemic has had profound effects on virtually every aspect of society. Tragically, the virus has claimed tens of thousands of lives. Now, I think Dr. Fascist has claimed tens of thousands of lives and hospitalized many more. Millions have lost their jobs, here we go, while others have been asked to work in unsafe conditions. Various businesses have had to shut their doors, perhaps for good. Sadly, some have endured discrimination and threats because of where they're from. The list of hardship goes on. Amid all this change, it's understandable you might have to be certain. Okay, then talk about your rights. So let me just give you the categories because Jonathan could join us, you know, anytime now, and I want to take him when he comes in here. But we'll go over these categories if we have a chance. But they're talking about categories where you might have a lawsuit: business interruption, wrongful termination, workplace discrimination. That should sound familiar, Cindy.
Mm-hmm.
Workers' compensation, nursing home neglect, funeral home negligence. Contact Morgan & Morgan. So let me just go over these real quickly because I think you'll find this quite interesting. So there's lawsuit potential for all these things. Business interruption. This is right from the Morgan & Morgan website. Obviously, this is commercial. I'm not endorsing Morgan & Morgan. In fact, they're welcome on the show. You guys want on the show? Come on. Besides, I could use the contribution to Action Radio. All right. Business interruption. Back to their website. It says, as a business owner, you likely have business interruption coverage included in your commercial insurance policy, which I don't know anything about this. This coverage is intended to replace lost income and cover various expenses in the event of a disaster. Therefore, if your business suffered losses due to COVID-19, you may have a claim. Oh, this is against your insurance company. This is interesting, all right? The insurance company is unlikely to make things easy. They might cite certain policy language or take any number of steps to deny your claim. Whether or not you think they're right to do so, give our attorneys a call. So, business, what if you're a doctor that's had your business interrupted? Can you make a claim? So go to my Facebook page, Cindy. This is something you might want to share with your doctor groups. Here's another one: wrongful termination. They say although most employers have navigated the coronavirus outbreak with the well-being of their workers in mind, I challenge that. Others have instead responded by using this crisis to get rid of employees for unfair and unethical reasons. Cindy, this is right up your ballpark.
Well, you know another thing too.
Okay.
If doctors have to carry malpractice insurance, mm-hmm. they need to also carry mail advice insurance.
That's an interesting thing. Well, see, the problem is that the malpractice is really being done by the government here. This is back to our original premise. Let me just finish this here. So wrongful termination. You may have grounds for a wrongful termination lawsuit if you were fired for bringing up health or safety concerns to your employer. Cindy, does that sound familiar?
Yes.
Okay, next one. Taking medical leave afforded under the Family and Medical Leave Act. Well, that doesn't apply as much.
Yeah.
Obeying a shelter-in-place order rather than going to work. I think the first one, bringing up health or safety concerns to your employer. All right? Contact Morgan & Morgan. You know, you guys might want to contact Morgan & Morgan.
I would be interested to hear what they say about that. I think the loophole that a lot of these employers are using are they're not firing. They're just not scheduling.
So they're kind of
keeping these employees in limbo.
Mm-hmm. That's like shadow banning. That's like shadow banning on Facebook.
Yeah.
They're actually censoring you. They're just not listing your stuff. Yeah,
right.
Go ahead, Bianca. I got more for you here. Yeah, go ahead.
Here's another thing. You guys roll with me. You're going to have to think. Why come the Catholic Church, the Southern Baptist, the Church of God in Christ, Jehovah, why come they are not up in arms? Because people are using the very thing that they teach. These businesses are ignoring them. Governments are going around them, over them.
The religious exemptions? Well, here's the thing. The whole point of an exemption is that it actually is an exemption. And what they're saying, here's the point I was trying to make earlier. Thank you for reminding me. All right. So what Florida law says is that you have to have not just a religious belief, but a sincere religious belief. Okay. Now I corrected that in the bills that I wrote. So who determines whether you have a sincere religious belief?
Why God is a sincere religious belief.
God.
No, God.
Nobody but
right.
God.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
But under Florida
it's
law.
It's your relationship with God.
Right, I know
that.
You don't
have to have a sincere love when you get a marriage license, do you?
Yeah, yeah.
Come on, Gene, get in here. Get in here, Gene, you know that.
No, I just want to know what a sincere one is. I'm baffled. How can that hold up in court?
Do you sincerely take this woman to be your lawfully wedded wife? No. This is a great conversation. Yeah, but the Florida law actually says that. Cindy, you can look it up. Under the laws that were passed, under the new ones, this is why I object to so much of these new laws that were passed. This is why we need better ones in this session, is that the employer gets to determine whether your religious belief is in fact sincere and can reject it on that basis. That is wrong.
It is.
When did that happen?
Yeah.
Oh, it's been Florida law for years. It was not corrected in the last legislative session. This is why I wrote those two bills. You know, I did my best. I wrote the bills. One for, you know, public health, and the other for parental rights. Both of those deal. I think the public health bill deals with the religious exemption. In fact, the religious exemption is an exemption. You can't judge somebody's religious belief. You know, the fact that they don't want this should be enough under informed consent, and that's in my bill too. First two bills, all proposed laws under the legislation section, writeyourlaws.com. That's where it is.
Religious beliefs are non-judgeable. Non-judgeable.
Right.
Agreed. All right, let me get you another one here. Workplace discrimination. This is you. So Morgan & Morgan, I'm not going to give their phone number. You can look them up. It's right here beside me. Maybe you should call them. Gene, we're going to start doing that. I want to start making calls during the show. We're going to talk to you about that. This might be kind of fun.
We should call them and talk to the head lawyer there and say, hey, look here, let me tell you some other things you need to include.
Yeah, no, listen, I want to do it when we're better known, when we have, you know, like a million people. So if I call Morgan & Morgan, they know what Action Radio is. I don't want to suddenly surprise them and say, hey, you guys are on the air at Action Radio. Huh? Who? What? What? You know, I don't want to do that.
I'd blindside them.
I want to have a bigger following. Definitely want a bigger – all right, workplace discrimination. Jonathan's on the line there too, so I want to bring him in here in just a minute. So workplace discrimination. So, Jonathan, what we're talking about is the whole idea of medical malpractice and why it can't be done. And I've got Morgan & Morgan, you know, our personal injury lawyers here. So one of the categories you can see, workplace discrimination. False assumptions and biases can foster a hostile work environment. If an employer or coworker discriminated against you during the COVID-19 pandemic, we may be able to help. Examples of workplace discrimination include firing an employee on the basis of national origin, cutting a worker's hours because of their age, excluding applicants of specific ethnicity in a job posting. Well, how about doctors prescribing medicine that works. You know, how about the doctor that you said that was put on leave but not allowed to fire? They call it, there's a term for it.
Unpaid indefinite leave.
Indefinite leave. Okay. So in other words, if they laid them off, then they could go get unemployment compensation. They could go work somebody else, somewhere else. They've been laid off. If they were fired,
well, you know, here's another point.
They could definitely, hold on just a second. If they were fired, they could definitely get workman's comp and go work unemployment and work somewhere else. But if they're on unpaid leave, they still work for the company, but they can't work for the company. So the company has absolute authority over them. So in other words, you know, you can't work for us and you can't work for anybody else either, and we're going to stay in charge of you. That is discrimination. Bianchi, go ahead.
Here's another thing. Mm-hmm. If Obama can tell you blindly that you can keep your own doctor, then why come you can't choose your own medicine, hydrochloroquine, and the other ones that, say, Donald Trump made mention of?
Yep, hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, monoclonal antibodies, which are being discriminated against, Florida, various other things. Yeah. Let me, I want to bring Jonathan in really soon here, but I want to get through just these more here. Workman's compensation. Healthcare workers, bus drivers, police, and other frontline workers have displayed tremendous bravery during the coronavirus crisis. Sadly, many of these individuals have gotten sick, leading to missed work, medical bills, and other damages. If you or someone you love suffered physical, financial, or emotional hardship after contracting the novel coronavirus at work, you could be entitled to workman's compensation benefits. What if you suffered major things from the vaccine? What if you're mandated to take a vaccine and now you got myocarditis? Would you not be entitled to workman's compensation also?
Oh, can I chime in here?
Oh, please do.
If you have experienced that, you need to be filing a claim with the government.
Okay.
The government has acknowledged at least one claim for injury or death caused by countermeasures of COVID, which include the vaccine, countermeasures to, you know, isolate, remdesivir, treat. And with that, they're acknowledging that, yeah, it posed a problem for someone. So I went on their website and looked, and I was shocked to see that, you know, there's only been at this point, looking at the numbers, 2,297 people that have filed a claim of injury after receiving a shot. I can't imagine that number isn't exponentially higher. But since the government
What government is that? The federal government or state government?
The federal government.
That's another thing. Workers' comp insurance is not a federal government. It's a state government entity.
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking at it just from the standpoint of that would counter the argument of safe and effective. If you have, you know, people, and how many of us have heard about people that got the shot and now have, you know, health conditions they didn't have before getting the shot, those numbers should be, you know, triple, quadruple digits, and it would counter the message of safe and effective.
Well, it also goes to the fact that if your employer mandated it, you know, it's a condition of your job. You're being coerced. You're being extorted into getting a GMO shot that has possibly injured you. And if it's done at work, then workman's comp should cover it. Jonathan's line is live. So Jonathan, if you want to get in on this anytime, feel free, and then I'll introduce you officially. But we've got a couple more categories.
It's called the Countermeasures Injury Compensation Program.
Ooh. All right. I'm going to have to listen to my own countermeasures. Jonathan,
first of all, it sounds like I don't know how long. What was your name? Sorry, from Morgan. Sounds like you don't need me as long as you can stay, because that's the, you know, the rubber meets the road there with the.
Oh, we need you. No, your question's coming. Yeah. Don't worry. we've got
all
questions for you.
But the thing is a number of things there. You're mentioning, I think, that, you know, people may hear that they have immunity, the vaccine manufacturers have immunity, and not realize, like I think you're talking about, but you can ask for compensation within the program. It's like workers' compensation, where it doesn't mean you can't apply for compensation. You just can't sue outside of the program. So enough people need to know that there is something they can do, and they should be asking, you know, for a claim within the vaccine immune system.
Yeah, see, I want to separate those two and do that. You got a little bit of an echo on your line, Jonathan. I don't know if your phone is on your computer's on or something. Yeah, go ahead.
There are probably a lot of people not telling us they've been injured
reporting.
Because they don't know what they can do.
Yeah, that's true. Go ahead.
And this program is separate from the VAERS system.
Okay.
So this thing, can you sue twice? In other words, if you can you sue under workman's comp because your employer required you to get something, or can you sue under workman's comp you can sue under other things because they discriminated against you for not getting it. So you should be able to go at this from both angles. Let me do one or two more here, and then I want to open it up, and you guys can just chat. The two last ones they had on this Morgan & Morgan thing, nursing home neglect. Nursing homes play an essential role in keeping our loved ones safe. These facilities must take every precaution to protect their residents and frontline employees from being exposed to COVID-19. If you suspect a nursing home neglect the well-being of someone you love, contact our nursing home attorneys. So here's the question on nursing homes. What if, like in New York, they introduced COVID patients into the nursing home? What if they're pushing a vaccine on people that's not a vaccine that's killing them? You know, what if all these other things? In other words, can you sue the nursing home even if they followed the acceptable standard of care? And Cindy and then Jonathan.
Well, that's
Jonathan, why don't you go first?
As we've said earlier on this program, that the vaccine, the well-known immunity only applies to vaccine manufacturers.
Right.
It does not apply to anybody else. So like the employer or the nursing home or anything like that. And we've talked, you know, I think in the past that if somebody is forced to take a vaccine, I don't see how they're not liable. They may be under a negligence theory or, you know, but it's one thing to say that the manufacturer is not liable. It's another thing to say that my company forced me to take it and they can't be sued. But then it sounds like you've also been... What's that?
I'm sorry, I was going to ask, is it the emergency use authorization that's shielding them from that responsibility?
I don't know how that works. I think that's a factor, but I don't know how that works in their favor. I mean, if they are coercing you to take medical care, I don't see, you know, I think that even if the vaccine manufacturers have immunity, them forcing you to take medical treatment, I think makes them liable. And they, you know, we could talk about whether or not they have the power to do that, which I don't think they do. But being responsible for the consequences is different from being able to do it. And so I think that people should sue. Now, part of the thing too is when you go to any, and we'll talk a little bit more about the plan of a lawsuit, but you know, you want to gather your information, be prepared to show that I didn't have this before.
Mm.
You know, because, you know, so you have to say, well, I have this condition. And they say, well, yeah, but you had it anyway. And you have to be able to have your medical records and say, no, I didn't have it until I took the vaccine and that kind of thing. So there are things that people should do to gather information and be prepared right away. And then many times in medical malpractice or medical malpractice or such thing, you have unusually short deadlines to notify them of a claim, and they can go to a medical board and review things like that. There are some things like that. But anyway, then we have this, you know, you asked me to look into this, Greg, to find this, and I guess you've been referring a little bit to the PREP Act, the Emergency Preparedness Act.
Before we start on that, let me just separate this so people understand what we're talking about. So initially we had Cindy on for talking about what's going on in the actual medical profession. And the question was, you know, where are the malpractice lawsuits? Why can't, you know, why is it that the standard of care the problem is you can't sue under medical malpractice because, you know, they're actually going by the standard of care, which is established by the government, but the real standard of care should be what works. So that's where we started this conversation. So now what I want to do is separate the liability of the hospitals, the medical administrators, things like that. And let's talk about the actual manufacturers. And so the manufacturers and other health professionals have liability under this PREP Act. And so, Jonathan, one of the questions I want to go over today is why is it two things seem to happen in a public health emergency. One, they think they can take away our constitutional rights. And two, they think they can take away liability from people, you know, during the health emergency to do what they want. And neither of those seem to make any sense to me. But let's deal with the health thing first. So the PREP Act. So we've got this COVID emergency. And then the Secretary of Health and Human Services declares that there's no liability because there's a public health emergency. Can you explain how all that came about and work and what it actually means legally? Let's introduce the PREP Act that way.
The PREP Act comes about
Go ahead, Jonathan.
Congress. Are you there?
Yeah, Gene, why don't you go ahead, Gene? That's our hotel bell. Someone ringing my hotel bell? I didn't ring it.
No, it's not me at all. I don't know what's going on.
Someone's got a bell.
Someone
stole our bell.
That's my phone. I'm sorry, that's me. It's my phone.
That's okay.
Okay,
Congress in 2005.
The son of the
New World Order, when, you know, good Republicans ran Congress and we could trust them, tongue in cheek, passed this law. Now you've heard about the vaccine immunity.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I don't think that the terms of that, I don't think it covers malpractice, because if a doctor says you should take this vaccine, because I saw Alec Baldwin on TV saying that you should take this vaccine and you have a contraindication. My father was a doctor, meaning that you have some condition or reason why it may be safe. You know, let's assume it's safe for everybody else. I know it's a huge dispute, but it's not safe for this particular person, because they have some condition or detail. Kelly Meggs, who's locked up as an oath keeper in the D.C. jail, the D.C. gulag, he cannot take the vaccine. He cannot take any vaccine because he's got conditions I don't understand. But he says he's on a certain vaccine for a certain thing. And if he takes
an autoimmune thing of some kind.
So let's say that the doctor says,
Mengele?
Go ahead, Greg, get the vaccine. And they have failed to investigate whether you are a good candidate or a bad candidate for taking the vaccine. And then you have a problem.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, I think you should be able to sue the doctor or the hospital or whatever for your bad reaction, regardless of whether the vaccine manufacturer.
That's negligence. Well, let's ask Cindy, because we've talked about this before. You know, nobody's being investigated. They're just blindly giving these you know, RNA GMO shots. They're just giving everybody. They don't check whether you've had COVID or not. They don't check whether you've got conditions that would warrant you not getting it. Like me, for example, had open heart surgery. Should I get it? No.
Cardiologist says you should.
Say that again? If they say I should.
Well, what about all those people? What about all those people that got both shots and the booster and still coming down with COVID?
Well, that's
should they not be able to sue?
That's a good question.
Well, they should,
but that's where your
friendly members of Congress, after getting, you know, after being wined and dined, decided to pass a law saying you can't.
Well, wait a minute. Shouldn't the Federal Trade Commission? Wouldn't that be false advertising? Wouldn't that be a Federal Trade Commission issue? I mean, they sue for false labeling, for false advertising. You know, if a product doesn't live up to the claims that it makes, like when I think it was either Lavoris or Listerine had a huge lawsuit from the Federal Trade Commission. I think it was Listerine, because they said, well, Listerine prevents colds. You know, and then they had to have this disclaimer for like 5 years. Although Listerine does not prevent colds or lessen their effects, you know, that's a Federal Trade Commission issue. Saying that COVID, you know, COVID vaccines, you know, stop COVID, is simply not true. And it's been demonstrated. Even the CDC says that now. Would that not be a Federal Trade Commission issue? Jonathan? Hold on, Pierre.
But the thing is they passed a law.
Right.
Because Congress, you know, was cozy with the vaccine manufacturers. It's a big business. And they specifically made an exception.
Yeah.
For vaccines, from what would normally be true in every other area of common sense and the law.
Yeah.
You know, so if you take a batch of equal sweetener and mm-hmm. it kills you, they can, you know, that your family can sue for wrongful death, but if it's a vaccine, you can't. Why? Just because Congress cut them a sweetheart deal. You know,
with the government paying for that one claim that's been approved, aren't they acknowledging now that isn't that saying that they're acknowledging it is problematic for people if they're going to pay out?
Well, it is. I mean, but the thing is that, I mean, the theory, not only do we have all these things and laws, but the courts have these unfortunate rules that they presume good faith when obviously it's not. You know, they assume that people did, you know, the Congress did things for valid reasons when, you know, people would laugh out loud if you said that in ordinary company, and that sort of thing. So there's so many trap doors and ins and outs that all add up to make it worse. But the thing is that you have to understand that it has been, you know, it's been specifically taken away from common sense. But that what they would say is that we're afraid that the vaccine manufacturers will not develop vaccines if they're facing huge amounts of liability. And that theory, of course, is debatable. I mean, it might, you know, we're seeing that these people are making gigantic, and they're making as much money as the Department of Defense, probably more.
Billions upon billions. But they bought their exemption. Hold on just a second. They bought their exemption. And there's two things going on here that I think we need to separate a discussion, and then we'll get to Bianchi. One is the VAERS Act. So back in it was like 1985 when Congress gave the exemption to vaccine manufacturers and allowed a vaccine fund to be developed to compensate people from taxpayer money as opposed to the vaccine manufacturers. Then sometime later, I'm not sure when, this PREP Act came out. And the PREP Act is the one that allowed the Secretary of Health and Human Services, you know, to order that the healthcare workers weren't exempt, were exempt from liability too. So you've got two cases of liability exemption. You've got the healthcare workers under the Emergency Declaration, and then you've got the VAERS Act. You've got Congress's law. So you've got a law, and then you've got a law and an executive order kind of thing. And so there's two different things, but they amount to the same thing, that there's a bunch of liability protection, not only from the vaccine manufacturers, but for the people that give them, you know, the whole healthcare thing all the way through. In fact, there's exemptions from liability, it looks like, for what I'm calling the no early treatment remdesivir ventilator death cycle. There seems to be exemptions from liability for that, too.
Well, so you can kill people, take the money.
Go ahead. So then it gets beyond.
Because for one thing, if you don't take the vaccine, mm-hmm. let's put the vaccine out of the picture.
Okay.
And then a doctor fails to give you hydroxychloroquine or monoclonal antibodies, and then you have injury or death.
Mm-hmm.
The vaccine immunity is going to have nothing to do with it.
Okay.
The failure to provide you with proper care for the sickness that you've got is not going to be protected in any way, shape, or form by the vaccine immunities.
Okay. So is it the PREP Act then?
So,
is that the declaration that protects people? I mean, why are people suing for wrongful death? This is our big question today. Why aren't people suing the hospitals when people are on the remdesivir ventilator death cycle?
Maybe because they just don't know they can. I mean, we could talk about what's necessary to sue because, like I say, okay. I've seen, you know, in trials where somebody's injured in a car accident, and most of the debate is about, well, didn't you have a bad back before the car accident? You know, there are things you have,
pre-existing conditions,
and it's not that easy. And someone has to come up and say, you, you know, your grandmother died because you didn't give her, because you gave her remdesivir or, you know, a thing, then you have to prove that. And that gets a very, that's a very expensive, like if somebody, you know, ran into my car at a stoplight and I have three witnesses, it's pretty, it's relatively simple. But if I have to prove that, you know, your grandmother died, and they say, well, your grandmother was going to die anyway. And you say, no, she died because you gave her, is it with the dangerous ones from remdesivir, right? And they said, that's why she died. And then you said, well, prove it. And you have to bring in all the expert witnesses who are, and you have to qualify, and then they bring in their expert witnesses and say, it wasn't the medicine that killed her. It was something else. And so it's not like just filing an easy, you know, slip and fall. It does require lawyers with a lot of money and willingness to buck the trend, but I don't know what's in their head about why they don't sue. They should. But the thing is, and they should sue for being forced to take. I mean, because we know that there is no executive order. You know, all this time when people were firing workers because Biden issued an executive order, he never did. I mean, they finally got around to issuing a regulation from the Department of Labor, OSHA. But most of the time that people were doing, and then that was suspended. So all these companies do not have the cover of saying, well, there was an order. No, there's no order. They're just out hanging out there, you know, naked.
We might get to Bianchi's question in a minute because I know he's been waiting patiently. Okay. Yeah. Bianchi, okay. You had a couple points to make.
So you guys, my question was solve a lot of these complaints. What I'm looking at is a dog chasing its tail. If this don't work, they throw something else out. But here's the thing. If you can take implied immunity from police officers, whereas an accident was an accident, now it's also bring about a prison sentence. Well, should not the same thing be applied to these drug manufacturers? And also the other scenario, if you have AIDS and you go into the Burger King and you have wetty palms, perspiration, do you not leave the potential of somebody else coming behind you sitting at that table and also contracting what you left?
Jonathan?
Of course, but this comes down to policy, which is made by members of Congress who do not have your best interest in heart, and then you have the con artist Dr. Fauci, using medical gobbledygook to wow these politicians and make them feel like, you know, that he knows what they don't know what he's talking about, so they assume he does. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's got all this crazy. He's got all this crazy double talk, meaning that that he's got. You know, I think it's a practice game. So they have these bought off congressmen and medical professionals telling them things they don't understand, and so they're just going with it.
Yeah.
Another thing. Why do people not know they can sue? Well, let's put some billboards up. These electronic billboards work nice and fine, $25 a month. Let's put billboards up and inform people that they have a right to sue under these conditions.
Is there a lawyer's organization, Jonathan, that might want to do that? What do you think?
Typically you see lawyers advertising that. I mean, lawyers are
I got the Morgan & Morgan website. You know, I mean, this is a big ad. We just went over part of it, yeah. Cindy has something, too. Cindy?
Well, I was going back to that countermeasures injury compensation program. That program was created back in 2010. And to date, there's only been 5,242 claims. 2,297 of those are related to COVID shots. There is an organization or a process through the federal government to make these claims, yet the numbers are extremely low. Now, in comparison to the overall use of that, certainly COVID carries the weight of the claims from 2010 to date. But really, we have to imagine that there are far more than 2,300 people injured or fatally wounded by COVID treatments or countermeasures. Why is that program not being utilized? And it's a two-sided...
Maybe it's too hard to use it. Maybe it's just too hard. Maybe the success rate is so small that people are discouraged. Maybe it's too expensive to use it. Maybe, you know, the lawyers are required. I mean, I bet you Jonathan has some insight. But generally, if something is necessary and not successful, it's because it's too hard to use the program.
Is it that, or is it that they don't know?
That could be, too. I didn't know about it.
I mean, I pulled up the site. There's a process to fill out paperwork. You don't even have to have an attorney to make the claim. Certainly, an attorney is going to work, you know, for your benefit.
Mm-hmm.
But
what's it called again? Countermeasures what?
Countermeasures Injury Compensation Program. And it's through the Health Resources and Services Administration.
Sounds like HHS.
That should be put on the Action Network website.
Okay, sounds good to me. Make me a post.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll share it. I put it on Citizens for Medical Freedom, a post about it. I'll share it with you.
Yeah, or if you ever want to make any of those posts public that I can share more easily, or I'll just take it from there. Pianki, and then I got something I want to talk about on our liability bill, just to let you know where we could go. Pianki, do you have a question?
Well, my thought pattern has been detoured, so go ahead.
Hey, listen, I lost a thought. It took me an hour to get it back, so I understand. Believe me, there's only so many things you can fit in your brain. So we have a bill which puts full product liability on the manufacturers. Now, unlike my rather extended description of Section 230, Cindy, I have my apologies again. Let me see if I can make this very, very simple, because I can get
caught
like any. All right, so here's what the current law says, and this is Title 42, U.S. Code, Section 300AA-22, Standards of Responsibility. And it says very clearly, subpart A1. Jonathan's like, oh, God, here we go. And it says no vaccine manufacturer shall be liable in a civil action for damages arising from a vaccine-related injury or death associated with the administration of a vaccine after October 1, 1988, if the injury or death resulted from side effects that were unavoidable even though the vaccine was properly prepared and was accompanied by proper directions and warnings. So basically, they're not liable. It says right there. So even if they do everything right and something gets screwed up, they're still not liable. Okay? So that's the bad part. The good part is what I changed that to, section let me see if I can find some part one. That, and so I said, Title 42, U.S. Code, Section 300AA-22, Standards of Responsibility, subpart A1, vaccine manufacturers shall be fully liable in any civil action for damages arising from a vaccine or vaccine-related side effect, reaction, injury, death, or other compensational event resulting from or a direct of a defect of their participation in the manufacture, testing, evaluation, certification, authorization, approval, distribution, administration, use, storage, transportation, or other responsibility of the manufacturer relating to their vaccines. Does that sound better?
My brain hurts.
Yeah.
That was the simple part. Jonathan, doesn't that make sense? Great, Jonathan,
ultimately, it's a clash of policy about what they're right. What they're willing to, you know, what the swamp creatures are willing to to change.
But all I said was
down,
I took the section that said there is no liability to saying there is liability. I just took out the word not. Basically, that's what I did.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some extra words in there, but essentially, the law says they're not liable, and I just changed the law to say in our bill to say that they are liable. That should be easy.
But you have to convince the the corrupt swamp creatures.
Well, the way we're going to convince them is with the people, that's us, the groups, that's Cindy and her group and other groups, the media, by people sharing with the media, and then the media reporting on this, and then eventually going to Congress. That's how this is going to go.
Well, speaking of the media, I sent them that video you shared about the pharmacist, and nobody wants to touch it. I've shared it with
surprise.
WEAR. I've shared it with One American News Network. Mm-hmm. They don't want to share it. They
Describe
don't want to know. They don't want to change
should,
it.
Yeah, people should know what that video does. I don't even know where it came from, but go ahead. Feel free to share what's in there.
It's basically a CVS.
Hold on, Bianchi. Hold on. Cindy?
A CVS pharmacist who was questioned about the safety and efficacy of the vaccine and informed consent. She asked to see the insert for the vaccine, and the pharmacist, it was kind of actually sad for the pharmacist because he seemed genuinely concerned that when he opened the insert, it was blank. And, of course, the customer, the consumer, knew it was blank.
Mm-hmm.
And he had made the statement that it was safe and effective. And she questioned him, what are you basing that on? And he couldn't answer it. So he couldn't answer it, and he had a blank insert for side effects and risks. And basically left him feeling, I think his own words were, inadequate as a pharmacist giving this vaccine, not being able to properly inform patients.
So in other words, he knew he was doing the wrong thing. He subverted his conscience. He overrode his good sense and his good medical knowledge, and he just followed orders. He did what CVS told him to do, and he gave the vaccine.
Yeah.
He completely turned off, and this is what concentration camp guards do. This is what torturing people do in communist, fascists, and other dictatorships do. The good people turn off who they are. This is what that Stanford experiment was all about when they took students. They made some guards and some prisoners. And it wasn't the prisoners that went nuts. It was the guards. They were the ones that went power hungry and started torturing their fellow students after like 2 days, you know. And it was the students, it was the prisoners that wanted to call off the experiments. This is insane. You people are nuts. But the guards went crazy, and they started wearing mirrored sunglasses, and they became, you know, complete and total little dictators. But this is the problem, is that people, you know, all that's necessary for evil to succeed is for good people to do nothing.
Yeah.
So here's a good person. He thinks he's a good person. He goes to work. He probably, you know, he has a family. I'm sure he supports them. He, you know, treats his kids nicely, treats his wife nicely. You know, he's probably a decent guy. But where he's not a decent guy is that he has subverted his conscience to do something to just follow orders to keep his employment, knowing full well that insert is blank. Now, didn't he produce an insert that was real? Didn't he go find a real one?
He did.
With all the liability stuff?
He did, but when he opened it, it was blank. And that
I thought there was one that was – I thought he had another one.
No.
I'll check the video
he
again.
Talked
okay.
about having one or seeing one at one point, but the one
right.
that he was producing to show her was blank.
Right.
And, you know, to his credit, I will say he seemed genuinely surprised.
But isn't that required to give?
Did some self-reflection.
Aren't you required to give that to people before a vaccine? Aren't you required to show them the insert? I would think.
Well,
or no.
You should be, but that's not a requirement these days because it's blank.
So it's not informed consent then. It's actually blank consent.
Exactly.
Really?
And that was her question to him. And when she posed it to him, it was kind of like the light bulb went off, and he had to second guess what he's done and said up to that point. Now, I don't know if he's changed his ways going forward, but imagine if every nurse, doctor, pharmacist had that same moment and said, look, I'm not able to give you the information for you to make that decision. This would stop.
So in other words, your job is more important.
Nobody wants to.
Yeah, the job is more important than other people's lives. That's really this guy has made that decision. That his job is more important than informing people properly and potential, you know, vast dangers to their health. Let's get to Bianchi, then I got Josie on the line. Bianchi?
Well, this thing about the liability. At the same time, you got politicians out here who want to pass legislation saying you can sue a gun manufacturer. You
That's
got politicians
true.
Out there who want to have bullets serialized so that if you drop a bullet, lose a bullet, and somebody else find it and put it in their gun and shoot somebody, well, it comes back to you, Greg or Jonathan. It's your bullet.
They want to make it a health problem. They want the CDC to regulate guns as a mental health problem, gun ownership. I mean, it's really, you know, I mean,
now,
some of this logic
has got to apply clean across the board, not apply at all. what now you have is a smorgasbord. Choose or not to choose. But you don't have to choose or not to choose when it comes down to vaccination and which brand you have, or you don't want to have no brand whatsoever.
What if they mandated gun ownership? What if they mandated gun ownership as a public health safety measure? In other words, we'll be a safer society if we mandate that everybody own a gun and be trained in how it's used. It would be a fascinating thing to see. Let's bring Josie in. Josie, what do you think?
Hey, good morning. I watched the video, and it really made me sad, like Cindy was saying. But, you know, a pharmacist's duty is to give you the details of each med that they give you, and they write it down, what a side effect, what's in the med, all the time. It doesn't matter if they prescribe an aspirin. They have to give you instructions. And this guy, he really, I can see it in his face that he was like almost frustrated because he's a pharmacist, a professional, and he's doing the wrong thing just because of his job.
But
and
he
I
didn't
also wanted to say,
feel bad until it was called on him. He didn't feel bad until it was pointed out, right?
Of course. We know it. I also wanted to say our friend was murdered at West Florida Hospital from remdesivir and the ventilator. They blew up his lung, shut down his kidney, lots of water in his lung, and then his liver and brain, and he's dead. He died yesterday at age 55, and I blame Florida Hospital and the family that didn't stop this. And, you know, the doctor was taking care of him. He quit a couple weeks ago because they tried to bring another doctor, but it was almost too late to bring another doctor from outside West Florida. And the doctor was very rude. And one of the nurses that I was talking to on my store that worked there, she said, oh, no, you're not going to be able to sue West Florida. No way. She goes, like, she knew it. So the family are not doing anything, I don't think, about lawsuit. I already gave them the number that you gave me, Greg, and all that about that lawyer. But can Jonathan, a question for you. Can this family do anything about it? Because this was a healthy guy, and he only needed oxygen when he came to the hospital with COVID.
Mm. Goodness.
Yeah, sure. I mean, but again, it's not an inexpensive lawsuit. But but yes, there are things he can do.
What about class action lawsuits?
Yeah, and is there a conservative foundation that would be funding some of this? I mean, there's got to be some rich, you know, folks out there, our version of George Soros, who would get behind this and actually help some of these families out. So let's go to Cindy's point too. So we've got conservative foundations, and we've got Cindy. What were you asking about?
A class action lawsuit.
Class action. Yeah, there we go. Jonathan, we got two of them. I'll let you take those on.
You could do that. I mean, a lot of the foundations that are out there, they have their strategic plan, and they don't have any money more than just to carry out their ideas. So when you bring something new to them, you know, I've had very little success with that. Is that they you know, that they will that's not in our budget. That's not in our plan.
But yeah, Action Radio is not in their budget either. I've asked. Trust me. I mean, the Heritage Foundation is.
Can't have class action.
Well, hold on.
Why don't you have mob action?
Hold on a second. We'll take that up separately.
No.
But yeah, but let's go with the foundations first, because you would think that they would do something. You know, like I say, Heritage spends more on their luncheons than, we could take that budget and do unbelievable things with it. And we could get the word out with things like we're talking about here. So foundations, your experience, Johnson, then we're going to go to class actions. Then I want to go to mob action. That's kind of an interesting thought. So any more on the foundations? Anything we're going to help there or no?
They have my everlasting contempt, but, you know, the Heritage Foundation, because unless it involves drinking wine and eating brie, and
I had a feeling about that. Okay, class action.
Yeah, sure. I mean, again, there are. Normally, lawyers would be all over this. It's like when you see some advertisement about have you taken this thing?
Yeah.
Have you grown three noses? You know, is your
They're reading from the inserts.
Okay.
Where the industry has developed this medication, and in rare cases they have these side effects and they have to disclose them. The lawyers are just reading off the disclosures and just looking for anybody who has that.
Huh.
And so normally lawyers would be all over this stuff.
But
they're mostly liberal and they don't want to go against
How is this liberal? What happens to the liberals? Liberals used to hate Big Pharma. It wasn't that long ago. They couldn't stand Big Pharma. Big Pharma was everywhere. Big Pharma was making too much money. Big Pharma was giving you things that you didn't need. So what happened?
I don't know. I guess they just decided to...
They get paid off?
...spend more money.
Are they now investing in Big Pharma?
A lot of people think about Joe Manchin.
Uh-huh.
Is that he's just
a maverick,
raising his price.
Oh, okay. I want to talk to Joe Manchin. I'm going to try and call his office. He intrigues me. Let's get to mob action. Priyanki, what do you got in mind?
Well, you need mob action. Didn't have a mob action brought about the sacrifice of police officers? No.
Right. Well, you know, I actually have a suggestion on that. In fact, I sent a press release out on it not too long ago of our Jailhouse Rock concert as a benefit for the January 6th political prisoners. And hold on a second, wait a minute. Because Jonathan, I've told about this, and he knows some folks in Washington. He's defending one of the January 6th, actually two of the January 6th political prisoners. So you want to talk about mob action. It's not a mob, but it's an entire concert dedicated to raising awareness and money, you know, for these folks. I don't care about the money so much. I think the awareness would be enough. I think if I could get, you know, Ted Nugent and Donald Trump on the stage together, we could change a whole lot of opinions out there about the January 6th people. So you want to talk about mob action in terms of a protest. Jonathan, what do you think? And then we'll get to Priyanki, and we'll go around the group.
What do I think about what? What I'm saying is that it's all policy. If you don't change the public demands and perception, then the corrupt, machine is just going to keep slipping things in. Let me say that when you talk about the inserts that were blank, the original vaccine immunity bill I was just looking at, it creates a presumption that the disclosure, was included in the medicine. I mean, so they've got a law saying that we're going to pretend it was in the box.
Is that part of the liability exemption that they're exempt from the liability of not providing the information? Is that part of it?
Your friendly members of Congress have passed a law saying that if they didn't include the information, we're going to pretend they did.
Is that the PREP Act?
That's the law. The insert, the warnings, the disclosure.
Well, which law does that come from?
That says this is intentionally left blank.
I'm trying to establish which law that came from. Is it the PREP Act and then the Secretary of Health and Human Services? Which one?
The earlier one, the original vaccine immunity bill.
Okay, so that'd be the 1985 one. All right, I just want to get that clear. All right. Back to the group.
Can I get back to my mob action?
Yeah, please do.
Josie, the hospital where this person was murdered, if people need to gather outside and throw rocks at the building. Do they not do the same thing at a police station? Do they not do the same thing at a jail when somebody's found hung in a jail? With no logical explanation, they start practically burning the jail down.
Well, I don't advocate for that, but I will say West Florida Hospital was our last rally location at the end of November, beginning of December. We had 10 people.
Not good.
Well, people don't understand, like Jonathan said, people don't know. When you're talking about one thing, you got to use an example. Obamacare says you can have your own doctor. So why come you can't have your own medicine, your own vaccination, your own brand?
There was a time when you could, pre-COVID.
So what changed? Let's get Jonathan back in this. So something has changed. This the two big casualties, I think, under this whole public emergency health declaration. One, they think they can take away our constitutional rights, which I've talked about before. We have on the show. And two, they think they can make everybody immune from liability. Both of these are wrong. You know, it's when they're trying to take away your rights that you need the Constitution the most. It's when you have a public health emergency that you need liability the most to make sure that they're giving you the proper care during that emergency. Wouldn't you think, Jonathan?
Yeah, but look, it's a different philosophy. It's the idea that somebody's going to have a $4 million hot cup of coffee and bankrupt these poor vaccine manufacturers, and we're not going to have any vaccines. So what's done is like workers' compensation is that you say you can't sue your employer. You have to go through this fund, and you'll get a minor amount of money, and you can't sue and get a $4 million punitive damages award. So I mean,
but we always said you can sue through workers' comp. We've already established that you can.
Well, no,
you can sue through this countermeasures injury compensation program.
I wouldn't call it suing. It's a
claim.
You know,
claim.
You apply, you file a claim, and they just pay you.
But I think that would be twofold. Not only, you know, I don't know what the government pays out of that program if they're big dollars, but it would also counter the safe and effective narrative if those numbers were exponentially higher.
Right. I mean, they would say that perhaps they're not, that, you know, with any drug, there's always going to be somebody who has a bad reaction. And that's just because human beings are not robots, contrary to what they think. Which is also why, with all due respect, I don't think pharmacists should be telling you whether you should take a vaccine or medication. I think that's practicing medicine without a license.
I don't think informed consent is telling them whether they should or not. They're supposed to be advising them of the potential risks.
Well, they can do that.
Well, risk benefit.
But the thing is, it's
blank. There is no information on it.
Right, but
it should be information for pregnant women, right. Pregnant mothers, right?
No.
A breastfeeder?
No. No.
But, you know, Alec Baldwin should not be telling you, or Bette Midler or somebody should not be giving you medical advice. Governors should not be giving you medical advice. I was out of town, and the governors are on TV telling you to get a vaccine. That's medical malpractice. They're not licensed doctors.
President Biden telling an average citizen at the tornado site to tell Aaron Rodgers to get a vaccine. You've got the president doing it. The president doesn't know anything about Aaron Rodgers' health status or underlying conditions that would preclude him from getting a vaccine. Yet on national television, he's telling an average citizen to tell Aaron Rodgers to get a vaccine.
Society has
accepted that.
Yeah, I would advise against using the term President Biden. He's still under an ongoing investigation and audit. So until the results of that are in, I would hesitate to use that term. I want to ask a really big question here in just a couple minutes once we get some of this hashed out. Then we need to take a break for a bit. So, Jonathan, you want to continue on that?
On what?
Any of the follow-up here on what Cindy was saying?
I just think, for example, the PrEP, I want to talk a little bit more about this PrEP Act. It's a little bit different because it empowers the department, the head of HHS, to declare a medical emergency in effect.
Right.
And so the law is not well defined. It's broad. It allows, and I would say requires, the Secretary of Health and Human Services to shape a declaration to the circumstances at hand at the moment. But it does not, but it has, but it, and it, and it allows immunity to people who deliver a medicine. It's not just limited to vaccines. It's any countermeasure against disease.
Yep.
And it shields them from immunity. And again, but again, like we say, well, you can't sue, but you can file a claim. So we're being technical about, you know, you can't file a suit, a lawsuit and you know, $4 million in punitive damages. But you can file a claim under the program. So but it doesn't immunize as many people as they think of. If the covered persons includes those who manufacture, distribute, administer, prescribe, or use covered countermeasures. So, for example, if your employer requires you to get vaccinated, they're not covered under this law. And the Secretary of Health and Human Services has to be specific as to geography and circumstances. And you know, it's not the blanket. In some ways, it's very broad.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the blanket immunity of the 1985 law. The Secretary has to craft a declaration that specifically fits the circumstance and update it as time goes on.
Yeah.
So
here's a question for you.
Well,
here's a question that's going to lead to our bigger question. I've got it right here. It says, what immunity? This is one of the things you sent me yesterday. When immunity from liability applies, it says this is a declaration that the Secretary did under the PREP Act, provides immunity from liability, except for willful misconduct, for claims of loss caused by or arising out of or relating to or resulting from, I guess it's everything, the administration or use of covered countermeasures to diseases, threats, and conditions identified in this declaration. So what exactly are the covered countermeasures related to COVID? Would that be vaccines? Would that be remdesivir? What are we talking about?
It's completely specialized by the Secretary's declaration.
Okay.
You know,
Is it a CDC guideline? Are those covered? I mean, what are the covered countermeasures?
It depends on each the Secretary of HHS is up to 9 amended declarations.
Oh,
and
great.
So they've been amended again and again and again. And there is no standard answer to your question. I'm looking at it now and I don't even know what it says.
Okay. There's a reason I'm asking it. And the reason I'm asking it gets back to our original question is why there aren't more malpractice lawsuits. And one of the criteria is a violation of the standard of care. It says this is from one of your folks, the American Board of Professional Liability Attorneys. And it says that you can't sue unless there's a violation of standard care. It says the law acknowledges that there are certain medical standards that are recognized by the profession as being acceptable medical treatment by reasonably prudent healthcare professionals under like or similar circumstances. This is known as the standard of care. A patient has a right to expect that healthcare professionals will deliver care that is consistent with these standards. If it is determined that the standard of care has not been met, then negligence may be established. So my question is the standard of care these covered countermeasures, even though these covered countermeasures include the no early treatment remdesivir ventilator death cycle? That is the standard of care, right?
No, I don't think that would be covered. Because what you're saying is that in treating a disease, somebody did not provide a treatment. I mean, I don't think you can have a negative countermeasure under the law. Saying not doing something is a qualified countermeasure under the PREP Act. I think if the standard of care would say you better give them monoclonal antibodies,
mm-hmm.
not doing that would not. I don't see how that could possibly be covered under this law. To refrain from giving life-saving treatment, you know, is not what this law is about.
No, but I'm saying that giving treatments, but the standard, what I'm trying to figure out is who establishes the standard of care. Is it the government guidelines, CDC standard of care, which is killing people, you know, like 90% of those that go to the hospital, you know, for COVID who end up on the remdesivir ventilator death cycle, or is the standard of care what actually works? Hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, early treatment, you know, monoclonal antibodies, things like that. So in other words, who establishes the standard of care, and if is the standard of care the government one? Let me, I want to get Cindy on this too, because I know she's got
it. Is it like when a person show up at the emergency room? Right.
Okay, hold on. Let's get let's go. Pianki's question. Well, I'm going to keep my question out there. Pianki, what's your question? And then we'll go to Cindy.
Well, is it like when a person shows up at the emergency room with a gunshot, the hospital has to give them some care, then let them go? Or do they say, we can't help you?
No, that's a different situation. In other words, that's whether you're giving care or not. What I'm trying to say is that is the standard of care what works, or is the standard of care what the government is recommending? Because what the government's recommending isn't working. That's why I'm saying the difference. So can you sue? Hold on a second. Can you sue if the standard of care, which in other words, what works, is being violated, but the government standard of care, the one that they're requiring or have the guidelines everybody seems to be following, is the standard? Can the defense attorney say, well, wait a minute, the hospital is just following the standard of care. The government recommends remdesivir, you know, ventilators. The fact that somebody died, well, that's just, it doesn't matter. That the hospital went by the standard, as opposed to the standard that works, which is ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, early treatment, you know, things like that. Cindy, I know you want to get on this, and then I'll get it to Jonathan. I'll give him a chance to think about it for a minute.
Well, yeah,
Cindy?
It's my understanding it's the Centers for Disease Control that is dictating to the hospitals the standard of care. And people are having to go to the court system to override that protocol.
Yeah, we got people going to court to get their family members out so they don't die in the hospital. They have to get a court order just to give them ivermectin, even when the doctor prescribes that, their family doctor. I know several cases of that. We've reported on them.
Because the doctors at the hospital are following the orders of the hospital administration.
But
and the CDC is dictating to the hospital administration.
Okay. So, Jonathan, why is the standard of care what the CDC is dictating rather than what the family wants and what the doctors know that works?
Well, it is, isn't. Traditionally in the law, the standard of care for any kind of expert, things, but medical malpractice is dictated by what a normal doctor would do in the profession. Now, that gets complicated by several things. One is that, you know, would a doctor disregard what the CDC is advising? Well, you know, they might. I mean, if
a lot of them apparently are.
Normally, if you were to do a medical malpractice case, you would have to bring in doctors and experts in medicine and say what and ask them what is normal in your profession. You know, if someone you know, has a headache, would you admit them to the hospital? No. If they show signs of viral meningitis, would you wait for a week, you know, because they could be dead in 24 hours with viral meningitis? I mean, those would be decided. You'd have to bring in doctors and medical experts to testify as to what a reasonable, conscientious doctor would do. Now, that gets complicated. Now, the CDC says, we advise you don't do X, Y, Z. You know, and the doctor says, "No, I have in my experience and my expertise, I would do that anyway." That would, you know, the CDC would influence the standard of care. You know, a conscientious doctor would listen to it, would read the thing, and say, "Nah, I'm not going to follow that advice." They would have that influence. Now, the other thing is the FDA has power that it should, you know, probably shouldn't have over allowing drugs to be used. So if the standard of care would be a malaria victim should get hydrochloroquine, but the FDA says, okay, that's fine, but the doctor's prescription can't be filled because we have regulatory power over medicine. That's different. You know, it's not the doctor making a good decision. It's the FDA saying that the medicine's not available.
Yeah, that's what they're doing with hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin. They're they're actually making it available. It's either not available by prescription. The hospitals aren't making it available, you know. And so here's my question, though. It's the standard of care that is the malpractice. It's the government standard of care that is killing people. So therefore, if you're going to sue, you've got to actually change the law in a court case and put the standard of care on trial. That's where I think we have to go with it.
Maybe, but I wouldn't give them the credence of calling it a standard of care, because
you can think about it for a minute if you want.
The standard of care is not. If normal doctors, the normal thing is the doctor would say you should take this medicine,
right?
And the government interfering with the free. What do the liberals say? Is it should be between you and your doctor?
My body, my choice.
So they're
heard that one before.
They're interfering with the standard.
Well, wait a minute. Isn't there a right of privacy? Isn't the same right of privacy that the liberals apply to abortion in Roe v. Wade? Doesn't that same right of privacy exist in terms of vaccines, whether you want to take it or not, between you and your doctor? I mean, if the right is a right, I don't believe, you know.
All the more so because there's no baby involved.
I'm not saying the right of privacy applies in an abortion case. It doesn't. But I'm just saying that they're trying to establish the so-called right of privacy, which really the Fourth Amendment actually establishes a right of privacy. But that's different. But they're trying to use that to say that the government can't interfere in a decision between, a patient and a doctor. So why is it that the government can't interfere in this decision?
Should it be my child, my choice?
Bianchi?
Should it be a my child, my choice, apply there too? You know, another thing, if the CDC is handing down all these handcuffs on these doctors, then there need to be mob action at the CDC office there in Atlanta. You need to be throwing rocks and spreading animal blood all over the place.
You know, I like the things you talk about. We need to put you in charge of Action Radio, Action Radio's actions. We need to talk more about this. But Pierre is absolutely right, because the left will do
that.
Greg. Yeah, no, I understand.
Here's the thing, Greg. The left would do that and paralyze you into submission.
Well, not me.
The difference is they get away with it, though.
Yeah. Well, Bianca's point is...
How can I look at you and tell if you are left or right?
Yeah, good question. You know, unless, who's rustling papers? You're the background. Yeah, but that's the question. Why don't we take more action? I think conservatives are basically cowardly when it comes to that kind of stuff. They won't get out there and take over the Washington Mall. They won't get out and make the protest.
Yep.
You won't see the condemnation. In fact, I wanted to have a reverse striker squad of people that if anybody doxes me or goes after any conservative or independent or patriot, you know, and tries to cancel them, that you have a cybersecurity strike team that cancels the people that are trying to cancel you.
Conservatives always on the defense, waiting around for the next bomb to come in, and they try to put up a shield and stop it. The Iron Dome.
Yeah. See, the answer
is
us,
though. Well, we play by the rules.
You got to change the rules. But the answer is
Well, you
got to
change the rules.
Arrogant.
Make the rules.
Yeah, exactly. To be perfectly arrogant, the answer really is for conservatives, patriots, constitutionalists, you know, all kinds of folks, the answer really is Action Radio and the citizen legislature. We do change the rules. We do make new rules. But the thing is, I think conservatives are so cowardly in the fact that they won't take action, you know, in terms of the mob action that Bianchi's talking about, that, you know, most people won't even share our bills. We have Republican groups in our own county here in Santa Rosa County that refuse to publicly support anything that we're doing, even though it would benefit them. That's the problem. We got a bunch of wimps we're dealing with, to be quite honest.
I've seen that many times before. You're not alone in that.
Yeah. Well, I'm working to change that. That's why we're doing things. I want the January 6th concert. We're trying to get all kinds of actions. I've got 25 bills to rock the nation. You know, that's going out this morning to a whole bunch of folks, including One American News and a bunch of members of Congress and various media organizations and media consultants, Hearst Magazine, for example. You know, all the folks that anybody that I think might help us out, you know, in fact, you guys, I think you're all on the list, actually, to get a press. If you're not, let me know. But yeah, there are things we are taking action. This is the center of action, I believe, in the conservative movement in terms of new ideas. Pianki.
And you got to also let the public know of the potentials of lawsuit. We do it with asbestos. You do it with melanoma. So you got to let them know about the potential. If you have suffered any of the following 20 things in this list, you have a potential lawsuit.
Here's an example of something that I made a PSA. All right, this is something that's on YouTube that anybody can share. You know, our PSA, for example. Let me scroll down here and find it for you. Let me play this for you. All right, so this is what I'm talking about, and there it is.
This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio. You've all heard those ads for people who have suffered medical or health tragedies, which say you may be entitled to compensation. But if you have suffered injuries or crippling diseases or medical procedures that went horribly wrong, it's not the compensation you need, it's the knowledge you should have had before the condition you suffer from now. So that you are never in that position in the future, I strongly recommend that you do not get any COVID vaccines. Get informed. Do your own research. For 99.97% of Americans, your natural immunity will give you, at worst, only moderate symptoms of COVID. If you've already had COVID, it's virtually impossible to get it again. There are effective cures for COVID, which will get you completely over the virus. There is no cure for the COVID-19 vaccines. Once you start down the road of DNA modification, there is no going back.
Okay, that's on our Action Radio YouTube channel. Anybody can share that. Anybody can send that out there. I've had that out there. I made that, 7 or 8 months ago. You know, so there is action that's being taken, but our biggest problem is getting it shared, you know, getting this stuff go viral. You know, I don't think people are...
Is that the problem, or is it that the people that make the decision to change aren't willing to accept it?
Well, I think
Congress,
we have to...
Senate.
I think we have to convince them. Like I say, citizen legislation starts with the people, then through the media, then to the legislature, rather than what's happening now, where it comes from the special interest to the government, to the legislature, you know, then to us. So I'm trying to reverse that. But I think people fundamentally don't believe that they can make a change. They've been so disempowered, so beaten down, you know, write your congressperson, you know, vote in the election. Well, they took away the vote in the last one. That still hasn't been corrected. So let me, I got to take a break right now because we have to play, I'm going to play our Santa Rosa piece and a couple of our sponsor spots. So we're going to have about 10 minutes when we come back. So what I want to do is talk about how we can empower folks. How do we get the word out? How do we convince people that they actually do have some power? And how do we get around the absolute oppression from the CDC and other agencies that people can't do anything? You know, so mute yourselves or take a break for a minute. I want to play this here, or I have to. We have sponsors. This is what keeps Action Radio going. So let me play you our church and state one, and I have another one I'm going to make. I should have made it yesterday, but I'll make one for today, and we'll be back in a few minutes.
This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents. Sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. There is no separation of church and state in the Constitution. Therefore, the Supreme Court can't imagine that it really is there or should be there, so they can't create the rule out of thin air and then enforce it as if it actually did exist. The biggest problem with the controversy between Thomas Jefferson, then president, and the Danbury, Connecticut Baptists, a religious minority, is that everyone focuses on the answer by Thomas Jefferson, saying there is a wall of separation between church and state, but they never consider the request made by the Danbury Baptists that Jefferson sought to answer, and therefore where the wall of separation actually is. If you only have the answer, then you can make the question anything you want, including making the question fit the answer to advance an agenda, or denying that there even is a question. The question now is whether the government is free from any of the moral constraints or persuasiveness of religion, such that religion and government are walled off in isolation from each other, so that government can contemplate and implement any power for themselves without any organized religious participation, debate, opinion, objection, or protest. That is a complete bastardization of the exchange between Jefferson and the Baptists, and it has been used to advance a bogus set of laws and court opinions. The background for this controversy comes from the article mentioned below, which says, "The First Amendment was meant as a limit on the National Congress only. Madison wanted limits on the states too, but they were rejected. State limitations on religious liberty and establishment persisted after the First Amendment was adopted. Religious tests for office remained in place in most states, and Connecticut, 1818, and Massachusetts, in 1833, did not disestablish their official state churches until decades later. The Supreme Court reinforced the idea that the Bill of Rights did not apply to the states, but rather only to the national government in Barron v. Baltimore in 1833. Back to me. Where this becomes especially critical is when the states, not the state as in government in general, but the individual states, establish their own religion and churches because they were not subject yet to the First Amendment. It is in that context that Jefferson is responding to the Danbury Baptists. The key part of the Danbury Baptist letter to Jefferson is this clause. What religious privileges we enjoy as a minor part of the state, we enjoy as favors granted and not as inalienable rights. And these favors we receive at the expense of such degrading acknowledgments as are inconsistent with the rights of free men. The Danbury Baptists, being a religious minority in a larger group of Congregationalists, which was the state religion of Connecticut, were being discriminated against for not being part of the state religion. And because the First Amendment only referred to Congress making no law regarding the establishment of a government religion, but left the states free to do so, we had religious freedom at the federal level, but privilege and discrimination at the state level. That is why the Danbury Baptists wrote Jefferson. Now Jefferson's response makes sense. He says to the Baptist, "Believing with you that religion is a matter which lies solely between man and his God, that he owes account to none other for his faith or his worship, that the legitimate powers of government reach actions only and not opinions, I contemplate with sovereign reverence that act of the whole American people which declared that their legislature should make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, thus building a wall of separation between church and state." Put in modern English, the individual relationship between man and God is direct, and the wall of separation is so that the government never crosses that wall between individuals, their churches, and God, with state religions, state churches, religious laws and tests, religious qualifications for office, etc., etc. However, there is nothing in law or the Constitution preventing churches, religions, and religious individuals like pastors, priests, ministers, etc., and just regular folks too, from exercising moral persuasion, evaluation, and criticism over government, because the free exercise of religion also includes the redress of government for grievances. The wall of separation of which Jefferson spoke only works one way. To understand Jefferson and the Baptists, it's not the wall of separation between church and state, it's the wall of separation between the free exercise of religion and any state-established religion. That's it. Everything else is agenda-driven narrative. The source for the Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Anti-Federalist Papers are from selfeducatedamerican.com. The Articles of Confederation are from usconstitution.net. This episode also used Thomas Jefferson's misunderstood letter to the Danbury Baptists from the Washington, Jefferson, and Madison Institute website. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's SRV1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. This is Greg Penglis for Strike Force, your source for pure energy. Strike Force is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. It contains caffeine, taurine, B vitamins, and potassium. You make your energy drink yourself. Here's how. Add one pack to a standard half liter water bottle or 16 ounce glass to create a full power energy drink. No sugar, no calories, no stirring, no shaking. Strike Force energy drinks come in original, grape, lemon, and orange. Each flavor pack is a liquid that adds an explosion of flavor to any beverage. Here's the best part. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strike Force, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code WYL to the discount code window at checkout. That's W-Y-L. W-Y-L comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, get a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strike Force is at StrikeForceEnergy.com. That's StrikeForceEnergy.com. Start your engines. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with a personal recommendation and testimonial for Eric Colley, our new webmaster and marketing guru. Eric has been invaluable in upgrading our website, writeyourlaws.com. To help you with your marketing, Eric Colley offers proven, cost-effective strategies to help small businesses, startups, and nonprofits market themselves on Google Page One. You can gain thousands of followers and be far more competitive, and this is the good part, without paid advertising. Most business owners don't have the time or expertise to excel at marketing. Even fewer have the funds to hire a special employee. And you don't have to. There is a better option. Eric Colley, a consultant who uses leading-edge marketing strategies to increase your profitability at costs which are far more affordable than an advertising or marketing agency. You can be seen high up in Google's Page One. You can dominate Google's local three-pack of businesses next to the search results map. You can increase foot and website traffic. Eric Colley can be reached at 208-999-7510. That's 208-999-7510. His website is besmallbusiness.com. BESMALLBUSINESS. And you can reach him by email at eric@besmallbusiness.com. And that's how you do it.
Okay, I'm going to ask Eric this week to create a Greg's blog section for writeyourlaws.com so that I can put my articles there. And you folks can put your articles there, too. So if you want to write an article, especially I can just see Pianchi, mob action. We need that one. We're back live. I'm just going to turn it over to you folks. Whatever you want to talk about is fair game. But if you have some suggestions for how we can reach out faster, more people, and get, you know, kick conservatives and patriots and independents in their collective butts. And again, to start sharing legislation and thinking about change, real change, the change that we propose, the nuts and bolts change that's already written down, I'm open. I'm open to suggestions. Anybody want to start?
Yeah. Well, the information needs to get out there.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I just have to keep pushing. I have to jump, but it does take persistence, and I don't know of any magic thing. But, you know, it's like everybody has to see themselves as active, you know, everyone listening, they can't just see themselves as passive observers. They have to push the information out, as Steve Bannon says on War Room. We have to get the information out there, and everybody has to, you know, be part of the push.
Well, we stand and would answer my emails. Then we could tell him how we could give him the ideas and the methods and the technology that we have developed here. And you know, like I said, one word from Steve Bannon on a show, and we start happening here. One word from Joe Rogan, if I've tried to reach him as well. Any of these folks, major publications, you know, out there that could do stuff. You know, Heritage announces at a luncheon. Oh boy, you know, any of these things will work. And we're just waiting for that that moment, but I'm not just waiting for it. I'm actively trying to pursue it. But any of these folks could put us on the map in a way that could get our legislation out there, and people could realize that the solutions are already there. We already got the solutions. We just need people to talk about them, implement them, share them, and get this thing moving. Anybody else want to take a crack at it? Jonathan had to leave. So we've got Cindy, Pianchi, and Josie.
I have to have concealed carry insurance.
Hmm.
If I send my son where he learns judo and karate, now his hands are deadly weapons. People need to start thinking. Think. What's that dome on your shoulders for? Think.
But you know, Pianchi, people are not thinking. People are letting the government run our lives, and you cannot do that. I lived through communists. I've seen it all. And, you know, it's not really about the money when it comes to Bill Gates, George Soros, China, and all these other people destroying America. This is about power and control. And they wanted to take control years and years ago. This is a plan that is over 20 years old. This is more. This is nothing, you know, that it just happened in 2019, COVID-19. And if Americans don't stop all this killing, it's going to continue. So, I don't know. It's very sad what Americans are allowing in their country, you know, still with a mask on, still getting the boosters. More nurses are telling me how many of their residents are going mad and insane, biting them and just kicking and fighting. The whole thing has changed in their area. And also one of the ladies was paralyzed after the booster, one of the residents. So we hear it every day at my uniform store, what's happening. So the best sources in town is Ruth Uniform Shop. Come and get the news. Come and get the latest. It's crazy.
Well, I want to broadcast for sure one day. We'll get up early. Go ahead, Cindy and Pianchi and Josie.
I wanted to get the site she recommended.
No, it's my store on Olive Road, Ruth Uniform Shop on Olive Road.
Oh, okay.
You should mention that every time you do a report, Josie. You can mention that every time you're on.
Okay.
Feel free. It's okay.
So I get a lot of report from all the nurses, the housekeeping. The housekeeping got all the juicy story, actually, because they do all the cleaning. They know. Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I know a lot of them, too, from all the different hospitals. And you get all the information at my store every day. There's a different story. And I alert a lot of the young nurses, and a lot of the nurses have got one shot, and after I talked to them, they said, we're not getting the second one. I'm not getting it. No way. And we ended up praying with a lot of them, putting our hands, you know, where the vaccine was, and just putting it in God's hand. But many of the nurses that come, they say, oh, they didn't want to lose their job, and a young man that just came the other day working in Milton, one of those nursing home facilities, he says, I don't have a high school diploma, and this is the chance of my life. And I'm like, but if you're not going to be around, you're not going to have a chance, you know? So it's very sad, very sad to see the faces of all these innocent people that they're going to be harmed, you know? So it is very sad, but we need to stand and I don't know. Americans are not doing anything. But I know Donald Trump and the intelligence military are allowing for us to go through darkness. But there is a light at the end of the tunnel coming up soon. But we are going to go through tough times first, very tough times. And the American people hasn't seen anything like it. You have seen looting and killing and all that in the street, but that's nothing. Nothing compared to what is coming.
You know, Peter was allowed to go around and squirt red substance on people wearing fur coats. It was spreading blood animal blood, cow blood, chicken blood, or red Kool-Aid in order to get a point across. But conservatives just sit on their hands and get prepared for the next storm that comes through.
Yeah.
Well,
Cindy and Josie, I've got an idea for you both. I just had, based on what Bianca was saying, what we need is a vaccine die-in. Remember they used to have die-ins, you know, Vietnam War and things like that? You know, if we schedule a die-in, these are people who are dying from vaccines. We're just, you know, just laid out on the pavement. You know, there's a direction action we could take, for example. That would raise some, that would get some media coverage. Anyway, Cindy, Josie, go ahead.
Well, you know, Citizens for Medical Freedom, we spent months on the sidewalk every Friday and Saturday.
And what happened?
Our numbers, we could never get more than 30 people at a time on a sidewalk. And the faces changed consistently. But to get more than 30 people, the only time we had over 100 people on the sidewalk was the November 11th deadline with Ascension. People are not interested in making a civilized stand, let alone a mob stand.
Well, let's get the kids involved. For Halloween, have a ventilator suit.
We have to go now, but there's a lot of creative ideas here. But part of the problem, I think, also is that the conservative news media, One American News, Newsmax, and to a lesser extent, because they're not as conservative, Fox, you know, is not broadcasting solutions. If there's a rally in Washington, CNN, MSNBC, you know, the legacy stations, they're all over it. They'll broadcast every possible protest, every possible anything, and you'll see it over and over again. How many times have you seen Madonna, you know, saying that she wants to blow up the White House? Okay, I mean, she should have been arrested for that by the Secret Service. And yet that's cast constantly.
Yeah.
You still hear that. You know, and so all this stuff's going on there. But the conservatives, and this is, when I go to CPAC, part of the thing folks will be talking to is Fox News, One American News, and Newsmax, and say, why the hell aren't you guys, you know, why are you still trying to be objective journalists? There is no objective journalism anymore. It's just liberal activism and conservative activism. And these folks better get it into their heads that they need to become conservative news advocates and start advocating solutions and start talking about rallying the troops. Yeah, otherwise, the left is just going to keep walking all over us. On that note, I have to leave you. But think about that. We're back in. Let's do it again next Thursday. I want to thank all of you for a really incredible show. This has been amazing. And so feel free to share the podcast. Cindy, share it with all your groups, everybody else. And we have to go. Thank you.
Happy New Year. Be safe.
Happy New Year. Feliz Año Nuevo, everybody. God bless.
All right. Excellent. All right.
And when you guys see me walking down the street with my vaccination syringe, Halloween suit, don't run.
I'll hand you a sign, Pianki.
I want a picture. Guys, we're off the air. We're not, but we got to go. Okay. Greg Fangles for
Bye.
Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction and our legislative website, writeyourlaws.com, WRITEYOURLAWS. And we'll be back tomorrow at the usual time. In fact, I have to – there we go. I have to, oh, it's a long story. I'll explain it later. Anyway, back tomorrow.